All right, welcome to National Liberty Alliance Thursday night. Today is July 24th, 2014. And I guess we'll go right to the questions. If anybody has anything we want to discuss in particular, mics are open.
Hey, John. This
hey.
Is Jeff Paul. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
Hey, long time no talk. I'm here with Charlie, and we were running across a couple of things. One of the things that came to our question, our minds, is with a lot of the courts right now, with de facto courts, of course, they're ignoring everything we do, and they invoke jurisdiction when it suits them, and then they claim they don't have jurisdiction when it suits them. I think a lot of other people are running across the same problem, so it just seems like the courts are getting worse and worse. Is there anything other than, forming the grand juries, what we're doing now, is there anything that you've heard of, with a lot of your connections that we can use to combat that? Any ideas?
Well, let's just walk, go straight to standing, I guess, because that's been on my mind a lot. And, some people, those of us who have experience in the courts realize that you can make your standing till you turn blue. It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And when you really think about this and you're trying to create your standing in a court, you got to ask yourself your question, what court are you trying to create standing in? Why even bother? Okay, so I really don't think much of standing. Of course, when I come into a court, I always, when the paperwork say I'm one of the people, and that gives you standing, period. But once you, the key thing is jurisdiction. Once you go into a courtroom, if the court is common law and you've got blood pumping through your veins, you have standing. You have, the only thing you need is a sworn affidavit, a complaint. That's it. A sworn affidavit that you've been injured, or a sworn affidavit concerning someone breaking a contract, or whatever the case may be. The sworn affidavit gives subject matter jurisdiction, and that's all you need. There's nothing else. You can't be thrown out for not having standing. As a matter of fact, the only ones that could be thrown out of a common law court without having standing would be a corporation. Corporation doesn't have standing. It's not real. It's a fiction. A corporation cannot sue one of the people. Now, you could sue a corporation, but a corporation can't sue you. So, going back to the fact that they're getting worse, it's because they're getting bolder. When you go long for a long period of time doing whatever you please, and you take the next step of taking that chance of doing something illegal in the courtroom, and you keep looking around and nobody sees it, nobody complains, you get away with it, you get richer for it, you get more power for it, and even when someone does come in to complain that's not a bar lawyer, 99 times out of 100, and that might be a low number, I don't know, but it certainly I think is realistic. The person going into the court doesn't understand the court they're in, doesn't understand how to protect themselves, doesn't understand how to take them out of their jurisdiction. And I think that is the clear problem. And, of course, they get bolder and bolder. When we go into those courtrooms without denying the jurisdiction that they try to set up, they're taking us into the equity side of the court. There are two courts that operate outside of the courthouse, and it's perfectly legal. One is equity, and the other is law. Law is the one we want to be in. Equity is not the one we want to be in, unless we choose for some reason, because there are situations where you might want to use an equity court. But what happened is equity has been abused and fused and has become some kind of a hybrid court. It has fused itself with the Chancery Court. Now, Chancery Courts have been in America long before the United States came into being. And it's been a problem plaguing our founding fathers were aware of it. They debated it in the Anti-Federalist Papers. They talked about it, and it was a problem. When the Constitution was written, they only put two potential courts, one equity and one law. And so therein is the problem. Now, the rest is the fraud. Probably, you know, it's been here since the very beginning. Equity courts continued after the Constitution was put into effect and we became a nation. And equity courts continued in many places out of ignorance, and eventually it hybrid into whatever it is we've got today. The enemy, which I guess we'll call the elite or the New World Order, they have used this system to create their fiction and to use that process in courts. People actually believe that the judge should be up there making the decision. After all, he went to school. He knows what the law is. And so people have been made to believe that. People have been made to believe because they said so, and everybody believes, so it's reality. They believe that there is such thing as a license to practice law. No such thing exists. So as long as we live in that fantasy with them, then that's what we're going to get. We're going to get the fiction. But when you go into a court and you stay with jurisdiction, you make your case clear and just keep driving down the line. The key thing when you go into a court is to object to everything, because everything they're doing is illegal. Every time they bring up these codes that control you and the process that they're in is illegal. It has nothing to do with you. It's not a common law court. That's a statutory court. So the common law court proceeds according to the common law, not statutes. So I think the key to winning in courts, ultimately, is coming in and holding your jurisdiction, constantly denying them jurisdiction, put the fraud onto the paper, and make it clear. And when you walk out of the court that day, you know, when you shouldn't have been there in the first place, because there's no reason to be there. You know, these hearings are just for lawyers to make money, and for them to make their maneuvers. But when you walk out of the court that day, you have to write your denial on paper. You know, you've objected already. You need to object to the fact that they had hijacked you into a foreign court. It has nothing to do with you. And therefore, that's a conspiracy. So you charge them with conspiracy, the judge and every lawyer in that courtroom. You charge them with conspiracy. They violated your unalienable rights. So you do a new wherefore clause as you go on, because you're going to add new people into your case. But before you do that, really, you want to, if that judge had made any decisions in that day, then you want to overrule those decisions with a writ of error, rescind them. And then that's when you add new people after that. After you do that paper, and another paper follows where you summons those people to answer into the court, you add them, and then you move on. And if they suspect that that's what you're going to do, if you can make yourself clear enough that they can't give you remedy, this is not your jurisdiction, it's not the jurisdiction you opened up, and that this would be fraud on a court, if you're clear enough, and your paperwork particularly is clear enough, there is a good chance you're going to get your way. If you're being brought into that court, they're going to let you loose. There's a good chance of that. If it's a federal court, if it's a state court, at least here in New York, they're too dumb to know, and you'll end up just suing them and going on. And now, the moment I didn't realize this for a while until now, the moment you sue a judge and a lawyer for conspiracy and the violation of your unalienable rights, at that, if you're in a state court, after you make the filings in the state court, you now have to move it into a federal court, because only a federal court can hear any cases that arise under the Constitution. So you move over into the federal court. And at least those people are a little more sophisticated. You have the better chance of winning. So.
Yeah, that might be so. I know there's no chance in the county courts. So.
John? John?
Hey, how you doing?
It's Lydia Reedon. Good. There's a couple thoughts I wanted to tell you right now. You were talking about moving your case into federal court because the state court can't or won't give you remedy. Well, I'm in federal court right now, and well, there's two things I want to give you. One of them is I set up my case really well for denial of equal protection of the law. I need judges in my case because even if I'm in a statutory court, they're refusing to obey their own statutes. They're refusing to obey their own laws.
Yeah, that's because they don't have to. I'm dead serious about that. That's a valid answer. They don't have to because they are a chancery court.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to call you back on another cell phone because this cell phone trips out.
Okay, I'll wait to talk before I talk. I'll wait to get back.
Okay,
I'm
going to call you back. Okay, bye.
Go right ahead. All right, while we're waiting, anybody else?
Yeah, I've got a problem, John.
How you doing?
This is Steve from Arizona.
How you doing, Steve?
Okay. I got cited for no driver's license, no license plates, and so forth back in November of this year. They stole my car, and they took me to jail, and they went through all of that. I filed all kinds of documents with them. I didn't go to court. I went to my arraignment, but I challenged jurisdiction, and as far as I'm concerned, they didn't have it. So I didn't show up at the court. I don't know if that's good or bad or whatever it is, but I didn't. Anyway, I wanted to get your opinion on a couple of things. Are you familiar with the Wayne Stump letter?
No.
Okay,
no,
well, this Wayne Stump was a state senator, Arizona state senator, and he wrote this letter on December the 10th, 1985, and had it certified, notarized, on January the 14th of 2004. Let me read it real quick. It has come to my attention that numerous individuals in our state have reclined all of their contracts with the United States federal government, the state of Arizona, and each of its political subdivisions, establishing themselves as a free man under the organic national constitution of the Republic of the United States of America. Consequently, they may be driving without auto registration, having our driver's license or any other evidence of contract, because many law enforcement personnel may be unaware of this contractual matter of auto registration and driver's license. It is conceivable that this situation may lead to confrontation between these individuals and law enforcement personnel. I urge you to inform yourself and your personnel about this matter as soon as possible. If you would like to be briefed by someone knowledgeable of this subject, please contact me. In the meantime, insomuch as this procedure is entirely appropriate when properly carried out, I would like to be personally notified of every such instance of confrontation in order that the persons involved and the public officials involved may be appraised of the correct procedure and appropriateness of the action on part of each concerned. And then he gives his phone number and how to contact him. Now, this was written to Ralph Milstead, which is the director of the Department of Public Safety. This is fairly well known by a lot of people. I gave this to the officer and at the time of my citation, and they read it and threw it back into my window and said it didn't apply. Well, I don't understand why it didn't apply, and I asked him why it didn't apply, and he just said it doesn't apply. Well, he's a state senator, and here I've got a police officer standing, a so-called police officer standing at my window. Who am I supposed to believe?
Well, the police officer the police officer is right. I mean, if you go into a store to order service and then tell them you don't want to pay for it, then you're not going to get your service, obviously. And the thing is that police officer works for a corporation. They're out making money. Yeah. And as long as you comply, or if you don't know how to deny, they're going to give you their tickets on their streets because they believe that is what they need to do. The corporate town or village or city got you know, actually put together a courthouse. It cost them a lot of money to do that, and they got all these cops for the town, the village, or the city, and that cost them a lot of money. And they'll soak the taxpayer to pay for most of that, but now they want to make a profit.
Well,
and
right.
That
yeah.
profit is going to be off of you. And until people either in one accord come together and realize that, you know, the emperor has no clothes, that this is a fiction, and denies them, calls for a trial jury, refuses to pay and wants a jury, you'll bankrupt them if everybody does that.
Yeah,
only other way, because they think that they have the authority to put you in jail, they don't. The fact that they put you in jail, only a court of record, if you look into the common law and look into the court decisions, only a court of record has the authority and the power to fine or to imprison. A court not of record does not have the power to fine or imprison. If you have a contract in a non-court of record, like an administrative court, like if you're an employer and you got an employee and you signed in to the contract and you need to now collect unemployment or pay unemployment for your employees, and then they come to get the money and you don't give them the money, they come out after you, yeah, they could do things because you signed the contract, okay? I had a problem with the Department of Labor, you know, some 20 years ago or so, and I refused to pay them a dime. And we went through their stupid administration thing, and they never got a dime off me, and they wasn't gonna. I had no contract with them. I didn't really understand what was going on back then, but I just refused to pay. And I told them I was under the Constitution, but irrelevant to that. The point is that they are applying something to you and steamrolling you into the system.
Right.
That's what they're doing. Okay. And the moment that they did this to you, you now, if you don't go in, they're going to come out and arrest you. So
that's,
you're kind of stuck in it.
That's another problem. They was out a week ago last Saturday to arrest me. Let me get your opinion. Let me read something here to you. This is out of the Arizona State Constitution. It's Article 2, Section 26. It's under bearing arms. Do you know a guy by the name of, have you heard of a guy by the name of Eddie Craig in Texas?
No.
Okay, he's an ex-law enforcement, and he's turned around and he's advising people. He's supposed to be pretty much a guru on traffic, as well as other things, but especially on traffic issues. I called him after getting the citation to get any suggestions or whatever he might think he might do. And he told me to look in the Arizona Constitution and see if there was anything in the Constitution that give them authorization to have police. I don't think Texas Constitution allows police in Texas or authorizes them in Texas. Well, I looked, me and my wife both read upwards and downwards and never could find anything that gave them any kind of authority, but I wasn't positive there wasn't something in there. Later on, I was reading through I wasn't looking for that necessarily. I was just reading in there to come up with some complaints that I'm putting together. And it says, let me read this to you. This is Article 2, Section 26, Bearing Arms. The right of an individual citizen to bear arms in defense of himself or the state shall not be impaired, but nothing in this section shall be construed as authorizing individuals or corporations to organize, maintain, or employ an armed body of men. What does that say to you?
Well, they don't care what it means. They're under a fictional process, and the people believe it, and as long as the people believe it, they continue onward. They have legislation that gives them that they believe gives them the authority. They have that legislating, often coming from the state, but mostly from the federal level, and then that's what they act upon. We have to step up and say, well, that's null and void. It was void from the moment of its inception because it's unconstitutional.
Okay.
It violates our unalienable rights.
That this does not give them any authority to have a police department?
No place will you find any place where they have an authority to have a police force. I have never seen that.
Well, I've heard you say that, and I didn't know exactly what you had in reference to that, but
Go
ahead.
It's void of us giving them the authority to create a police force. The only legal police force is that which runs under a sheriff, because the sheriff is an elected individual. We elect him to protect us. And he's elected usually, at least here in New York, every 4 years. And all real police forces act under the sheriff. Now, the New York State Police is an illegal police force. It's controlled by a governor. The governor is a governor of a corporation, although he appears as if he's the governor of New York State, but he's really the governor of the state of New York, and he's also the governor of New York State, but that's kind of just under the cover, and he ignores that. He operates as a corporation. And so is every county and village and town and city. They're all corporations. They all have corporate charters. Their corporate charters ultimately is that which is legislated to control them. They have all this administrative stuff going on, and they run them in courts as if it's law. And as long as the people are dumb enough to fall into it, because slaves are dumb, they keep them dumb. Don't think that it's not a coincidence that people aren't interested in religion, that people aren't interested in the law, that people aren't interested in how the political process works.
I understand.
Okay, they're really brainwashed that way. We're trained in school to run away from those three subjects, and that is what gives us liberty. That is what truly controls our destiny.
Okay.
We're not in control of our destiny. So you can get all these people. Look at the fact that you were arrested. You were kidnapped.
Right, I understand that.
I wouldn't have waited 1 second, and maybe you can't do anything in prison, but the moment you got out, boy, let me tell you something. I'd be laying out my case in federal court real quick, and I wouldn't go to their courts anymore.
Well, what I did do is I contacted the Arizona Attorney General, or the office. I didn't talk to him, but I talked to the office, and they said that what I have to do before I do anything else is try to find remedy locally right here where I'm at in this town of Marana.
Right, well, they're in on it.
Well, I know that, and I didn't really want to go that way.
And you don't, and you shouldn't. Why be subject to their process? Then that makes it legal.
Can I ask a quick question, sir? Was there a warrant for your arrest? When they arrested you, did they present you with a piece of paper that was signed by a judge? Pardon me?
You mean at the time of the citation?
No, when you said you went to jail, they arrested you and they put you in jail. Is that correct?
Yes, they did.
Okay, here's what you need. I'm going to solve a lot of these problems right now, and with John's kind permission and Gerard's kind permission. And it's very timely for us in New York because the NYPD just killed a man in a chokehold, okay?
Right,
so I'm going to tie this in to everybody's concern. I'm going to give John a treatise on false arrest and false imprisonment. This is not my personal opinion. It was written by a very good authority. It organizes up everything you need to know. If you and the police cannot stop you unless you are engaged in disrupting the peace, like if there's a disorderly conduct, or if they see you committing a crime in front of them. Unless that happens, they actually see you do something, disrupting the peace or committing a crime in front of them, they need to have a warrant for your arrest, which they have to present to you. It has to be signed by a judge, and it's got to be based on sworn oaths. So if they took you into a jail, and even at your trial, well, you didn't have one because you requested a jury trial or you didn't know and they didn't give you one, but if they can't present you in the court papers for holding you with a signed arrest warrant, that is false arrest and false imprisonment. So what I'm going to do... No, what I'm going to do is give to John a treatise. It's about 40 or 50, no, it's about, well, I don't know, it's about 60 or 70 pages. It's a very easy read. I'm going to Skype it to him and ask if he'd be so kind, after he reads it, if he put it up on the website.
Okay.
Everybody can, in like an afternoon, like one or two afternoons, you'll read it, and you'll say, hey, they didn't even have the authority to take me in the first place. So now you've got false arrest.
Well,
false
imprisonment. I understand my position as far as being falsely arrested. The officer that pulled me over, he said that I was exceeding the speed limit. That's what it was started out to be.
Mm-hmm.
So
well,
anyway,
again, let's get back.
What I would like very much to get that document. Thank you very much.
I will give it to John, and I will Skype it to John. And he will review it, of course, and anyone else he feels he wants to review it. And I'd ask him after he reviews it to make sure that, you know, it comports with everything that he's saying, if he'd be so kind as to put it on the website under essays and articles so we can educate ourselves. This is not my personal opinion. It's a great treatise. It is organized many decisions, and I think it goes back to citing the Magna Carta. So, you know, I'll give John a chance to look it over.
I'll take a look at it, and it may have some validity in a common law court. It may even have some validity in the statutory courts if they were operating under true equity. The problem is that they're acting under chancery. And in chancery court, they do whatever they please. But the key thing is this, it's all about jurisdiction.
Right.
You know, you could make it very simple. I think of this in a very simple way. I don't get complex at all. It's a very simple thing. They don't have jurisdiction. They can't prove they have jurisdiction. They don't have subject matter jurisdiction because they never, ever, ever have a sworn affidavit. So they don't have subject matter jurisdiction.
Well,
they don't have personam jurisdiction because they're talking about all these statutes all the time. I'm not in a statutory court. I'm in a common law court. So they don't have jurisdiction in personam or subject matter. Now, with that in mind,
actually,
with that in mind, huh?
I was just going to say they cited me with a ticket. They didn't give me the ticket, and I didn't sign the ticket. I didn't get the ticket till after I was home several days out of jail. They didn't give it to me at the time. They just threw handcuffs on me and threw me in the back of a van and pulled me away.
Well, they kidnapped
but
you.
But I never showed up in court. And one of the reasons I didn't show up in court, one of the other reasons was, that they never charged me. That is to say, they had never served me with an affidavit, a signed sworn affidavit of what I had done. So as far as I'm concerned, they never even charged me for it.
Right. Well, they might get a little nervous if you go up against them with that, but I don't think so. Most of these courts, they really don't care because they got carte blanche to do whatever they please. They're criminals. They're making money. They got power. They got authority, and they never lose. That's a false sense of security, because then they meet someone at one point that understands what's going on and takes them to task. You know, if I went to jail, I would not rest till those people spent at least 10 to 20 days for every day that I was in jail. That's my requirement.
Amen and hallelujah. I spent 11 months illegally. So, John, here's my question to you. I'm in federal court right now, and I presented the judge with a stipulation where my school stipulated to lying to have me enroll in the school. Stipulated. So I don't have to prove anything. And I asked the judge to please take judicial notice, which means that they must accept this evidence. I don't have to prove anything because they stipulated, yes, we lied to Lydia Reading to get her to enroll in our medical school, okay? The judge must accept this evidence. I don't have to do anything more than give her the stipulation.
legislation, which they did. And then they said, now that they want to get me into the school, here's the case law from judges in Brooklyn, right here where I am, that says, once you want to get her into the school, all bets are off, the contract is rescinded, and you give her all her money back. The federal judge, I got the ruling today, completely ignored my request. I said, please give me an order to have all my money refunded to me and to stop stealing money from my disability payments every single month, $90 a month, to go to pay for this nonsense, for classes I never took. The judge completely ignored it. So I'm going to a federal judge on Monday saying, okay, your lower district judge right here in federal court completely ignored this. Please change my judge to another judge and enforce and give me an order that says I want my money back. And I'd like to carbon copy that to you, and I laid out my case very nicely.
Their favorite thing to do with someone like you is to make the point that you don't have standing. You see, you're a citizen in their eyes, under the, what is that, the 14th Amendment, and you have privileges, and mommy and daddy might give you the privileges today, and tomorrow they might not, you know, because it's a privilege. You see, you got to understand the mentality of these people. You're in the wrong jurisdiction, and what did you expect the judge was going to do? He was going to do exactly what he did, because you're going up against other judges, number one. They don't like that. You're going up, and you're going in without a lawyer. They certainly don't like that, okay, because, you know, they got lawyers that should be making money, and the other lawyers are upset that you're being in there not, without a lawyer. They feel that you don't have the ability to really argue the case because they're snobs, and a thousand other reasons. But nevertheless, unless you get a judge that's decent, which I haven't found one yet, but I can't say they ain't there yet, that there's none there, but I just haven't found any, you're not going to get a good ruling. I've never met anyone. I wouldn't say I haven't met anyone. I did win a case pro se. In those days, I went pro se. Today, I don't do pro se because pro se means part of their process. If a judge says, "Oh, you're being pro se," I say, "No, I'm in my own person. I'm here as in my own person." Period. But I did win a case, and I think the judge just didn't like the other lawyer. You know, that was against me. You know, and I think that's why I won the case. And that was before I even understood what I was doing, because I'd been in court a few times. I have no clue what I'm doing there, but I just knew that I was right, and I tried to argue my case as a contractor. But in any event, generally speaking, you don't win court because they just throw you out. Especially if you're going up against a judge, another judge is not going to give it to you. Now, you hold their feet to the fire, take them into the common law. As long as we still have that fear hanging over them, that they know it still exists, and if they push hard enough, and you know how to maneuver through the courts and press towards that issue, they'll get nervous and make a deal. They'll want to get rid of you. I had one success in federal court with the IRS, and I truly believe the judge, I put the judge into a box. He knew that if I pushed it up above his level and got an appeal, because first of all, he didn't have the right to make a decision in my case to begin with. He couldn't give me remedy. I made those points clear. But I put him into a situation because they did break their own rules, and the federal rules are very, very strict on themselves, usually. But if there's a way they can twist around it, they'll get around it, because remember, you're in a chancery court.
Hello?
Yeah, hello? It's not I switched cell phones, so it's not us. You just clicked out for a minute. Did you lose John? Hello?
I think so.
Yeah. Hello, John. I guess it's not us.
I had a question for him.
Pardon me?
I said I still had another question for him.
Yeah, hello? He just clicked out. Hello?
So we just have to wait till he clicks back in?
Yeah, no, I'm glad this happened because I thought it was me and my cell phone, but it's not. So, hello? They probably can hear us. We can't hear them, which is kind of interesting. Hello?
How bad about him?
Hello?
The gentleman that's asking the questions right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is Neil in Michigan. I'm just jogging John's memory. Eddie Craig is a former deputy sheriff. and his videos are on the NLA site.
Oh, they are.
He probably didn't recognize the name.
Maybe I've seen him. I'm not sure. I've seen so many of his videos, and I'm not sure from where.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't.
I just
really
wanted to mention
like
that.
John says,
we can wait for John to get back on,
and that's what I'm afraid of. I was trying to consider what I should do because I didn't really want to take it in to the courts that are currently available to us, and that's when I got involved or found out about the NLA, and I thought, well, you know, if this can be put together, I'll wait because they don't have a statute of limitation in common law. And I was worried about the statute of limitation. But I need to know, I was kind of holding out to see if I couldn't bring this before the common law court through the
Let me ask you something, sir. How long were you in jail for?
They put me in about 12:20, and I got out about 10:30 that night with no money. They took every penny I had and just put me out on the street.
So you were in jail for a matter of hours.
Yeah, it was a matter of hours. They kept me in a cold cage. Now, I got hypothermia while I was in there. When they let me out after 7 hours, it was, I guess it was punishment for something, but I'm not sure what.
Oh,
when
you should take that very seriously, sir, because in Rikers Island, extremes of heat and cold are used to punish inmates. It's done deliberately. They put one inmate, a veteran. No, listen, this is important because you're going to need this information, and you can find it on the internet. You can just like Google the New York Times. There was a veteran put into a cell that was 100 degrees, and he died. So when they use these extremes of heat and cold, they're doing that deliberately. So take that very seriously, because that's called cruel and unusual punishment, and you argue the Constitution.
Well, right now what I'm trying to do is not get arrested again. They came out a week ago Saturday, said they had a warrant. Now, they didn't take
you need to see the warrant. Produce the warrant. You want to see the warrant. It has to be signed by a judge, and the judge can't sign it unless the judge has sworn affidavits. So you want to see the sworn affidavits and the warrant. And the treatise that I'm going to give to John on Skype and hope that he puts on the internet will tell you more. But at the very least, if they're going to come out to arrest you, you go, and I wouldn't even wait if I were you. I would go down there and say, so I see you want to arrest me. Let me see the sworn warrant, get a copy of it, and let me see the sworn affidavits that they're based on. And they're going to start freaking out because they're going to start making up excuses about why you don't need to see it. The more excuses that they make, the more you know they don't have a warrant. And you tell them, if you touch me without a signed warrant, that's a false arrest, and yes, sir, I will hold you, not the state or the county, you, officer. You personally, the guy that put the handcuffs on me, I'll be taking your house away from you and your retirement fund away from you. So if you want to put the cuffs on me without a signed warrant, you are the person I will be holding responsible. So you want to see the signed warrant with the judge's signature and the oath. The more they tell you they don't have it, the more they try to make it go away, the more they know the more you know that they don't got it and they're scared to death because you are going to hold them personally accountable for what they're going to do to you. So that's what my first move tomorrow morning, if I were you, I'd get up at 8 o'clock, I'd be down at the courthouse at 8:30, and I'd say, I want to see the sworn warrant. And if they can't produce it on demand. Pardon me?
The police department or the court?
Well, if the police are trying to arrest you, you go down to the police department. I would go down there with a tape recorder and witnesses and a hidden camera if you can get one, but that's all probably over your head. But what you could do is go to, and you're going to hear the police say to you, you don't have the right to audio tape or videotape. Don't show them that you're doing it. They're going to claim that you don't have the right to audio tape or videotape in their precinct. Bull cookies. You have the right to do and say whatever you have to do and say to protect yourself. They tried the same nonsense on me when I was videotaping with a hidden camera in federal court, and I got the U.S. prosecutor lying about it. If I didn't have that hidden camera video, I would be in jail right now. Okay, my lawyers lied about me. If I didn't have hidden camera video, I'd be in jail right now. So you don't listen to them when they tell you that they made up a little rule that you can't audio tape and videotape in their precinct or their federal courts or their courthouses or their state offices or their federal offices, because that's just a way to make sure you don't have the evidence to protect
right.
yourself. So you keep your mouth shut. You go down to Radio Shack tomorrow. You buy yourself for $49 a tape recorder. I don't know if you're sophisticated enough to use a hidden camera, but you have a tape recorder on you. Make sure you turn it on. You bring your friends and your family with you. You go down to the precinct because you're going to get affidavits from all these people, and you say, I understand you're trying to arrest me. Talk to the desk sergeant. Don't talk to the officers anywhere else. You talk to the sergeant. The sergeant has supervisory responsibility, so you can sue the desk sergeant. And there's no way you can stop a suit against anybody because they're responsible for supervising and training all these people. So don't talk to the officer. Talk to the desk sergeant and say, I understand you're trying to arrest me. I want to see the warrant. Now, and when he starts double-talking about why you don't need to see it or why they don't have it, you know you got them. Make sure you got at least two or three people with you who will sign affidavits as soon as you can. And you'll write the affidavits for them and get it notarized immediately. Any time go by. And make sure your handy-dandy little life-saving device, your tape recorder, is on. If we didn't have that tape recorder, we'd all be in jail right now.
I'm back now.
Are you back?
Just a minute. Okay. Let me clarify something. When they came, they drove onto my property, which is supposed to no trespassing. I asked to see the warrant, and they wouldn't show it to me. I asked.
Then you need to start putting affidavits into federal court, saying if they refuse to show it to you, you need witnesses, affidavits, tape. You can take from, let me tell you something, if I didn't do this, I would have been in jail already. If other people that I advised didn't do this, we'd all be in jail already, okay? Those tape recordings are MP3 files. Just like John is recording us right now, those MP3 files can easily be uploaded into the internet, where every single lawyer, prosecutor, every enemy that these people have, it will be up on the internet, and their enemies will say, touch this man, and we'll use it against you, okay? So what you need to do is make sure that you carry your handy-dandy little life-saving device. That is not a tape recorder. That is a device that's saving your life. So when you go into the police department, I'm going to use an analogy here. You are a Jew going into a police department that has been taken over by Nazis. Make no mistake about this. You are dealing with Hitler. So you assume these people are not on your side. So when you go in there, you better surround yourself with two or three other people who will give you affidavits, your family, your friends, everybody who ever owed you a favor in their life. And you walk in there with your tape recorder running. You do not tell people your tape recording so they can take it away from you. And you have to speak to the desk.
Can I interrupt here a minute?
Sure.
This is a new voice to you guys. This is Mrs. Steve. When the police came to arrest him on Saturday, I told them, I asked them what for, and they were confused about what for, but they had a warrant, they said. But I just told him, you're not taking my husband anywhere. I said, he's got a terminal illness. You are not taking him down there and putting him in a refrigeration again to let him die in one of your cells. I said, you're not doing that to my husband. And Steve finally got up and came out, and he asked for the warrant. But
they
had to go back to their car to get it. They didn't even have it on them, so they just went ahead and left.
No, I asked them for their ID, and they wouldn't
give it. Oh, yeah, they refused to give ID.
Okay, if they don't have a warrant produced on demand and you asked for it, that's criminal. And you don't care about everybody else. You look at the police officer and say, if you want to engage in a criminal act, I will hold you responsible. Let me see the warrant. It has to be on a piece of paper.
I'm disturbed about the fact that I wasn't letting them take in my terminally ill husband down there
they didn't have
in their refrigeration. They were quite shocked. and they asked me what terminal illness, and I told them he only has one kidney and it's failing.
Now, no, don't tell them what their terminal illness is. It's none of their business.
Well,
you tell them
they weren't taking him, and they didn't. I don't know.
That's because they didn't have a warrant to begin
with. They walked away after I said, "You're not taking my husband
anywhere." They don't have a warrant. They think you're stupid.
Yeah, but let's go back to the beginning, okay? Let's go back to the beginning, because if you're going to run into this kind of a problem, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
We can hear you.
If you're going to run into anybody that's going to run into a problem, look, you're not going to beat these guys in their game. You get stopped by a cop, and whenever I'm stopped by a cop, I comply. Well, look, if he ends up giving me a ticket, I'll deal with him in court. I'm not going to deal with him on the street, certainly not.
So
I will comply with whatever they want. I know I got to go to court, so I'm going to go to court, because if I don't go to court, depending on what it is, you know, what kind of ticket it is, if it's just a moving violation, nothing big, I send papers and I don't go. But I go to court, then you just deny everything there. You're there by a special appearance, and you're speaking from your court. That's the key to understand what's going on. I'm in my own court. I'm speaking from my court, and I'm here by special appearance. And the purpose I'm here is to challenge the jurisdiction. And you don't have jurisdiction, so you need to let me go. And if this court does not let me go from their jurisdiction that they claim they have over me, then I let them know that their court is subject to collateral damage from my court. There's nothing else to talk about. Now, if you leave that court and he lets you go, fine. They're probably not going to. They'll give you another day to come back because they want to continue with you. And now I'm not coming back, because now I go to the Supreme Court and I file a paper, okay? And I sue them. Now, once you get into the Supreme Court and you sue them, now they come out and the judge in the Supreme Court will conspire with the lawyer for the judge in the town court or the city court or the county or the village court, whatever it is. They'll conspire, okay? I will challenge the jurisdiction. I'll let the judge know that I opened the jurisdiction. I opened a court of record, and a court of record proceeds according to the common law. It's all in the paperwork, and I'm one of the people, and I'm here to get remedy. I've been injured. That's what I'm here to get a remedy, not them. I'm the injured party. And they'll deny that, kind of talk, and they'll continue on. I'll object, and I'll demand to know what jurisdiction are we in, because I know what jurisdiction I opened this court, and it sure sounds to me that I'm in a Nisi Prius court. I'm in some kind of a foreign court. It's not the court that I opened up. And so I've been hijacked to another court. So what jurisdiction are you moving me into? Where? Now, they won't answer you. They will not answer you. But you have to object to everything they're doing, and you object to the whole process, and you put on the record that the judge has a duty to speak, and he did not speak, and that's fraud on the court. And you're talking now about the Supreme Court, because this is the way it's going to happen all the way through. It's a battle all the way up, but why go through all the changes? Don't argue your case. They don't have the authority to hear it. Don't get involved in telling them that you have standing, because they don't have you're only going into their jurisdiction when you do that. They don't have jurisdiction. So when you walk out of that court, if they make any decisions, you overrule the decisions with a writ of error. You rescind anything that's if that happens. Nevertheless, you do an affidavit of everything that took place. You do an affidavit, of course, on the first part, and you do an affidavit on the second part in the second court here. You do an affidavit, and then now you move your court. You add the judge and the lawyers. That's for the other judge. Now you got two judges on the line and all the lawyers involved. You sue them all for now violating your unalienable rights. Now, after you do that filing in that state court, you then go and do a paper and move. Just take one day after another day, right in a row. Then you move the court into the federal court. Now you go to the federal court, and as long as you maintain your jurisdiction, you should get a settlement or get the case will be thrown out. At BEM, the worst case for you is the judge will throw everything out. But they'll try to do it in such a way as to really just be quiet about the whole thing, and nobody will bother you no more, and it kind of disappears, and you'll get a letter from the other people saying, we removed the charges. And now if you want to go out after him after money, that's fine. But if you're happy with that, that's fine too.
No, I'm not happy with that at all.
Well, of course not, because you've been damaged. You went to jail.
Well,
so,
but there's a lot more to it than that. But I want to go after him for RICO. Actually, I want to go. You wouldn't believe what I want to do. But what I
John is saying everything correctly. I agree with everything. And I think what people don't understand is when he says jurisdiction, what he's saying is what power do these people have over you?
Right.
So that's what and John's right about that. So and usually when you get to the federal court and he says, okay, they want you to shut up and go away because you're opening up a can of beans. They don't want people to look. Just go away. He's right about everything. This is what you should be doing. And that's where Corey is because Corey is the one of our state coordinators, and that's where he is. But I'm in federal court. I'm the injured party. I don't want my case dismissed. I want my remedy, which is give me my money back from my school, and you've been persecuting me for 25 years. You can't give me my life back. You can't give me my career back. You can't give me my health back. You can't give me back the life of my dead child. So I want to go after these people, John. So what do I do now when I have a judge saying, oh, no, the two judges that refused to put your life in jeopardy, that refused to uphold state law, you know, there's a woman out there threatening to put a knife in your throat, and she's not fooling around. And I got her roommate who said, hey, that woman isn't fooling around. She hit me in the eye. I had to run from my home for 2 weeks and move, and she destroyed $5,000 or so of my property, and I want to join Lydia Ray in suit as a plaintiff because I was denied equal protection of the law by the local police department, another precinct, and by the local district attorney's office. And so now we're in federal court, and I got this judge who's saying,
let's make cases very simple. You don't have to get complex. Okay. What I keep saying over and over again is always the same thing. Keep in mind and keep focused on that point. It's just that you have to do a little different work to do this or a little different work to do that to get it to the same place. The place you're trying to get to is in a common law court. That's where you're trying to get to. They will not allow you to get there. And I'm going to punish them for not allowing me to get there. So, let me tell you what you do, okay?
Okay.
How many decisions? Now, first of all, you started off where? In the state court?
No, I started off in 2004 and 2005 in federal court, Southern District of New York.
So you went to a federal court. And how many decisions have been made? Did they throw it out? What did they do?
In 2005, they invented a reason to dismiss my case. In 2007,
let's stop here. 2005. Okay. I just want to make a note here so I can follow the chronological events here. 2005, they threw it out of court. Why? No standing.
They fabricated. They made up. The federal judge said, "You as a former student cannot point to a school policy that would allow you to access and correct your records. It's bogus. I have federal law. I don't need a school policy."
Okay.
And then he made
denied you remedy. Let's call it that.
Okay.
Okay, next. 2005, he denied remedy. Now what?
I went to the appeals court, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals.
That's where you made your next mistake, but go ahead. You appealed court, went to the appeals, and what year was that?
That's in 2006 to 2007.
Okay, so we'll call that 2007 because they concluded with what?
They just upheld the lower court ruling.
Upheld, okay. Of course they
did. Well, you know, they pulled so many dirty tricks that it's hard to
Okay. Let's get back down to the nuts and bolts because common law, you can go back any time to get remedy. So you got 2007.
Okay,
now what?
So in 2007, they kicked it back to the lower court, and I wouldn't allow the lower court judge to get away with anything. So in 2007, again, the upper court kicked it back to the lower court, and again, they denied me a remedy. They just, you know, ignored everything.
Okay, then what?
In 2008,
aren't you tired of going to their courts by now?
I've been beaten up.
I know. I'm trying to make a point, though. I'm trying to make a very, very
Their goal, John.
You're tired of dealing with these people, aren't
no,
you?
No, I'm not tired. I am fighting literally for my life because they're
I understand that, but I'm trying
No, you
to
don't
help.
Understand. No, you don't, because I was told point blank to my face, our goal is to imprison you for the rest of your life because you won't shut up. So you got two choices, pay us money, shut up, or we're going to put you in some locked place for the rest of your life because they can't take what I'm saying.
Well, that's a very important point that you have to have on the affidavit I'm going to talk about in a minute. But let's go back now. 2009... What happened?
No, wait. 2007, 2008, all of the evidence is coming out in a landlord-tenant case in Jersey. And all in Jersey, in 2008, going into January of 2009, all the evidence that said that I was right went to Judge Falcone, Judge Rodriguez, Judge Pass, and a whole bunch of municipal court judges. In 2008 in Jersey was when I was in June. I had a in 2008 in Jersey in September is when I was physically beaten up at Jersey City Medical Center based on all the lies my medical school told Jersey City Medical Center behind my back.
But we don't need the whole story though. Let's just get down to the nuts and the bolts. The nuts and the bolts.
Okay. So in 2008 and 2009, all of the evidence came out in Jersey. It was ignored all the way up to the state attorney general's office. In 2009, I went back to the Southern District of New York, and the U.S. Marshals had the evidence in their hands in their office. They threw it out. In 2009,
The marshals threw it out or the court threw it out?
No, the U.S. Marshals in the Southern District of New York, the guy
who... Well, that's just more defendants if you want more money and more, and you want to bring them to justice. So at this point, you started off with how many defendants in the beginning of your case? One?
In 2005, it was the school and the school officials. And from 2005...
Okay, so school, let me write this down, school... And two individuals, two officials. Okay, so there were three entities, two flesh and blood and one fiction that you were suing. Right now, 2009 came. Have you added anybody else into this, or you're just two in those three entities still?
No. What I did was I went through all appropriate civil authorities. So I started with the police department.
Well, you went through all of their appropriate civil authorities. You didn't go to common law. I'm trying to really show you something here. I just want to get the nuts and bolts, so I'm going to tell you what to do and fix it all, and you're not going to spend 10 years to fix it.
No, that's fine. So I went through, the police department. I went through all civil authorities on every state, county. I started at the city. I went to all appropriate authorities in their system, as you correctly pointed out. Thank you for correcting me. City, county, state, and federal level.
Right.
So in 2014, I'm now in federal court, and I named everybody. The marshals, the police department,
the
judges.
As you must realize, they're trying to wear you out by putting you through that whole process, and most people wouldn't go this far. Most people would be going in with a lawyer, and they certainly can't afford to go this far. So here you are. You've gone this far. You've gone that mile, and now you've added people onto the case. How many defendants are on the case now?
Oh, God, over 30, probably 50.
That's good. At least you've done that part right. Okay, so you got, let's say, 30 defendants. Okay.
Probably 50.
Okay, let's call them 50. All right, now 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, was there any decisions by the court in any of those years?
Yes, in 2009, the school pressed false criminal charges against me. In 2000, the district attorney.
Yeah, but what did the court rule? You don't care about what they charge against you. What you care about is what the court ruled.
Okay, so in 2010, I'm falsely convicted of second-degree aggravated harassment because I was making phone calls to the school. Now, making phone calls to the school, I had a legitimate purpose. So that was ignored, and I was falsely imprisoned in Rikers.
Second degree aggravated what?
Harassment.
Okay.
Yeah.
The school. You don't have to get into the story. We just want the nuts and bolts. What took place next? 2011. Did they make any other?
So from 2010, I'm falsely imprisoned in Rikers till 2011, 11 months. And then and I get out of Rikers in 2011, and from 2011 to now, I've been fighting the false conviction with an appeal, and I went into federal court, and the situation for me is getting worse, as you know, because I have someone threatening to put
Let's revisit now. Okay.
Okay.
Now, you need to go back to the court totally fresh. You need to reset all your paperwork. You have you have to let the judge know, I had an epiphany. I just realized that I have liberty and I'm free and I'm in the wrong court. And it's been hidden from me all this time. I mean, this is kind of, you're not going to say it that way, but your papers are going to reflect that, okay? So now you're in a reset. And now you go back and you go to 2005. They denied you remedy, you write an overruling. 2007, they upheld, you overrule them. You do a writ of error. You could do one writ of error and do it collectively to all the courts and all the people and all the judges. And I certainly hope you've been adding judges on as you go. But you have to overturn every single one of them, okay?
Okay.
And the reason why you're overturning them is because your court is bigger than their court, and you just found that out. You have to come in as one of the people in this court of record, and you're suing, and you name all the people. You have to do an affidavit, which I'm sure you got lots of affidavits. You can bring them all together as one and do one affidavit to bring you through the whole system. Someone's bleeding through. Let's see who's bleeding through. All right, anyway, you do an affidavit. You bring it all together. You got to keep it simple, real, real simple. You got a lot of stuff going on, so you put the really, you know, the details go into your affidavit, but your paper has to be minimum and focused, and it refers to the affidavit. You also want to add to this what's called the law of the case. We have one up online. It's 25 pages, I think, 26 pages. Just take that down and make the changes appropriate for you, and you put that in there. You'll want to do a memorandum of law of the two courts. We got one up online. You pull that down. You make things appropriate, and you put that in there. Now, through your paper, you make it simple. Your paper is going to say very bare minimum stuff. You may write 10 pages. You may write 12 pages, but it's going to be bare minimum because you're going to focus and refer. You're going to talk about jurisdiction, and you're going to refer to the memorandum of the two jurisdictions. You're going to talk about certain details, and you're only going to really talk about the big points, and you're going to refer to your affidavit. And then you're going to bring it together, and you got to do it in such a way as to put the judge on the line. And when you go into the court for the first time, the very first thing you do, first of all, what you will find out when you go into a court, You're the plaintiff, they're the defendant, you walk into the court, and the very first thing the judge does is he addresses the other side. It always happens that way. You have to step up and say, I object, Your Honor, I'm the plaintiff, I'm over here. You see, now you're pissing him off on the one end, but he understands what you're saying on the other end because he disrespected you by doing that. Okay, so you bring him back to your side. Now you get your point. Now, he may stay on that side. Look, I'll be with you in a minute because he's going to try to intimidate you. Fine. You know, let him go do what he wants to do. You get your time, and you object. I object, Your Honor. First of all, I have no clue what we're doing here. This is not a common law procedure. You guys are talking about something that has nothing to do with my case. You're talking about all these statutes, and he's trying to make these motions. You don't have the authority to approve or disapprove any of his motions. You're the magistrate of the case. This is a common law case. See, that's your position, that's your process. Now, he looks down the line, and he sees a couple of things. He's going to see you sued a lot of people, and a lot of judges and a lot of lawyers. he's going to be concerned on the one hand of being put on that list. On the other hand, he's not too worried because he figures you don't know what you're doing. But now he sees you had an awakening, and your paperwork changes dramatically. And your focus is no longer on the arguments of the bullshit in the court. Your focus is now on law and the fact that these judges and lawyers and courts are not obeying the law. And you're bringing them back to the law, and you're going to see to it that the law is applied. And you're going to have your wherefore clause in here, which is going to have huge, huge damages. You're in the multi-millions of dollars. I would easily go for probably $500 million, and you'll probably end up with 10 or 20, you know, but that's what I would be going for. I'd want every single person that was involved in your imprisonment, and that may only be a couple of those people, so whoever they are, I want them 10 days for every day I was in. If you were in for a year, they're going 10, okay?
No, actually, this is all good.
Actually, I go 20 days. You settle for 10, okay?
Well, now, no, this is good because I've been mad at it. Let me just ask you one quick question, and I think you're going to say no, but that's okay with me because I've been managing towards this solution. Everything that you're saying, I've been, and they see it coming because, first of all, I'm the plaintiff. I filed my case as the plaintiff, so I wasn't dragged in for, like, you know, a speeding ticket or anything like that. I went in and said, I've been injured, now I'm holding you accountable, and it's 25 years of damages. So that's okay with me. I got lots of people. I've already been writing this writ of error in effect, because when I go and say no, because I do a weekly broadcast, a live show, and I say, when the judge said this, this is how he lied. When the judge said this, this is how he lied. So I'm shaming them publicly in my public relations campaign, and I already have widespread agreement. I've already gotten them to make a lot of admissions of guilt. So I'm managing to this. I can write it all as a writ of error. Here's my quick question to you. Unfortunately, my case now can involve New York State as a defendant. I asked you this before, and you think this is overreaching, but it may not be. So here's my question. I know it's stupid, so I'm going to apologize in advance. Since we're arguing jurisdiction, and Corey has the same question, so we both have the same stupid question, and that's why we're asking. New York State, by their own admission, will probably be a defendant in our case. And we know it's a corporation and it's a fiction and all that, but we can sue that corporation called New York State. And even in their courts, their nisi prius courts, they still have rulings that say, yes, an individual like me or Corey can sue the state, the corporation of New York State. Well, if we're suing a state, that means we the court of original jurisdiction, and it might even in my case be the court of exclusive jurisdiction, because my case really did go to ambassadors. So here's my, as I work through this whole system, so here's my question. If we name New York State as a defendant, then the court of original jurisdiction is the Supreme Court. Now, if I move my case to the Supreme Court, because I'd love to do a bold move like this, the Supreme Court does hear, it's very few because most of us are stupid, very few cases, not in appellate review, not in certiorari. They do hear a limited number of cases as the court of original jurisdiction. If I put my case to the Supreme Court and I got 2 months to do it in, and then once I'm there I say, now I'm going to change this to a common law court, can I do it that way? I move my case. Go ahead.
No, you can't.
Why?
Because they're going to rule on a case that you went through. You think you're going to the Supreme Court thinking you're going to argue. They're not going to let you argue. If they hear your case, they probably won't even hear you. They'll just read it. But if they did want to hear your case, they'd only be hearing for the sense of the appeal. Remember, the United States Supreme Court is not a trial court. It's an appeal court.
No,
okay.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. It is a trial court, and very few people
I know you mentioned that, and I haven't seen it yet, and I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but I haven't seen it because, you see, let me explain. If you go into the Constitution, it says that there will be one United States Supreme Court. That's it, one. And there is nine judges that sit on that court. And that court ultimately is really an appeal. It's the last effort of your system going through the system.
No. Just 1 second. That's true, like, most of the time. But the Supreme Court does sit as a trial court very rarely. It does that
because most people. Scalia is going to sit as a trial judge?
Pardon me?
Scalia is not going to sit as a trial judge because Scalia understands that he's in a court of record and a judge doesn't get to make a decision.
Right. So if I project my case, now I'm not saying that if I do this, just because, you know, we're breaking ground here doesn't mean that it's not lawful and it can't be done. It just means that we're blazing a trail. So there are people who do have the Supreme Court, this has happened in the past, sit as the trial court. And of course the Supreme Court doesn't like doing this. They probably don't even know that they can do it. Some of those justices probably don't even know. Scalia knows.
Why would they sit and judge in a common law court when they know that only magistrates could sit in a common law court and they don't get to make a judgment?
Terrific, because that makes our argument that the highest court of the land.
The highest court of the land is there to overturn the injustice. That's what they're there for, nothing more.
But
they
she's
they
not
are
going,
the final
she's,
word.
She's not
no,
going to
she
the court of record.
No, because here's the thing. You
right,
can't
well, she
have,
goes, if you go in not as a court of record, then they're going to rule against you. Or probably just not hear the case because they're not interested in hearing a case that they're going to have to rule on in such a way that's going to violate your unalienable rights, and so they don't want to do that, but they're also leaving those courts alone because they're acting in a jurisdiction that you have agreed to by consenting and going to the court. Now, I think that the United States Supreme Court justices are wrong in thinking that way, but that's how they think.
You're actually right about that, because until I get the paperwork at the lower court switched to the common law, then I've agreed to everything they're doing.
Let me tell you something. You will not even, if you do the right thing and you're able to, look, it's all about keeping it simple. It doesn't get any more complex than keeping it simple. If you give them too much information, make too much argument, next thing you know, you're out of your jurisdiction, or they'll slide you into a jurisdiction, and you won't even know you got slid into that jurisdiction, and you're going to lose. But if you understand the jurisdiction, you listen to every single word that goes on in that court, and you object to everything, okay, eventually you're going to get your way when they understand that you finally came to a realization. I believe you get your way anyway.
Well, no, you see, here's the thing. I'm sorry for interrupting. Here's the thing. I had a judge who understood that I was wrong. They got rid of him real quick. So this has nothing to do with right or wrong or truth or justice. This just has to do with judges who are interested in maintaining the system. So because that's all they got, and it's so blatantly obvious.
Right, but I'm telling you, your case, on the one hand, is a very simple case. Matter of fact, most cases are. On the other hand, it's a little complex because you've got a lot of details, and you're trying to tie all 50 people into the game, so you have a big story to tell. So you have to figure a way to tell the story in such a way that you don't confuse the people in your papers, and it's very simply done. Again, your affidavit is your key paper. You can do a 100-page affidavit if you want, but I would try to keep that to the minimum, but you can't leave nothing out. You do have to give detail, so that could be very long. But you see, the affidavit is your story. It's just a story, and that story is important because it tells the crimes. It tells the situation. And you see, the United States Supreme Court, the federal court understands this too. If you're able to keep your jurisdiction, they know what they got to do because they know that an unrebutted affidavit rules the court. Case over.
No, I understand that, and I can keep the story very simple because it's the same crime being perpetuated. It's the same crime. It's not about the details, getting lost in the details of each episode of harassment and stalking that have been inflicted on me. It's the fact that each time I'm victimized, I don't get protection of the law. I'm allowed to be victimized. So basically, I'm a black woman in the Jim Crow South, and I keep going to the good old boys and saying, hey, the Ku Klux Klan is stealing my stuff. Hey, the Ku Klux Klan, you know, murdered my husband. Hey, the Ku Klux Klan raped my child. And they keep going, so what?
Yeah, and that's who you're going. You're going to the devil to try to get justice.
Exactly.
You'll never go to get it. You never go. Look it, until you go into the court and bring it to the courts of justice and not the court of injustice, and they'll try to keep bringing it back to the courts of injustice, and you got to be right on top of it and bring it back. You got to write writs of error. Okay.
No, I get that. And I can write. No, and I can make it very simple. Thank you, John, because this is really good for me. I can keep it very simple and clear that says, you know, there was the injustice and then it's perpetrated and then it's perpetrated. And without getting lost in all the details of who said what to who, it's always the same crime. So, and it's always the same individual who's using other people as puppets, which is, you know, Martin Bachstein, who is the attorney for the school, and maybe a couple other attorneys who are former federal prosecutors. Okay. So, you know, it's always the same. But here's my question to you, and I think this clarifies this for me and Corey. If we go, we think that if we go to, because we're suing New York State. New York State is
Corey,
a defendant.
Corey has an extremely powerful case, but he's waiting too long. Now, I spoke with him, and we're going to move. And if he moves, he's going to win, and he's going to win big and hard. But if he does, they've turned the steamroller on, and they know exactly what they're doing when they do that. When you come in with an axe on your shoulder, and you turn your steamroller, and you just take them all, they start to realize they can't stop you. You're an out-of-control steamroller taking them. They got to deal with you now. You see,
I know.
They
so
know
here's my
they're in jeopardy, and that's where you got to put them. You got to put them in jeopardy.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. They have to know that the judges have to know that you want to commit this crime for, you know, the school that's standing in the background. It's your house. I'll take it. It's your car. It's you who are coming off the bench, and that's what stops them. When they know they're personally accountable, they have to feel it. But here's my question. I know that Corey's going to take his case out of the state court and into the federal court. The only federal court he can go into is the court that I'm in right now. So he's going to get the same experience with the same federal judges because
No, he's not.
Well, he may not because you're backing up. There is one federal judge in Brooklyn here who actually is a decent judge. But the rest of them, because I'm burning my way through three or four of them right now, and it's all political. The judges who are ruling against me are politically connected, and they're keeping control of their political party. That's what's really going on. But putting that aside, if I go to the Supreme Court, because, you know, you're suing a state, and you've got to go into a higher court.
I don't understand how you think you're going to get the United States Supreme Court to hear a case on a trial level. And if you're going in there, they're an appellate court.
There are two things. They're an appellate court, but they also are a trial court if you have in their system, if you have appropriate subject matter jurisdiction, which would mean that if you're suing a state, like the state of New York, then and according to their rules, which you're saying don't play by their rules, I get that part, you know, establish your own common law court and hold their feet to the fire. But according to their rules, if you're suing a state, then the court of original jurisdiction is the Supreme Court. So if they want to break their rules, that's fine. I mean, then you take this to the very highest levels and you show that the Supreme Court itself is breaking its own rules.
Yeah,
so,
but
you're
a court of record. You're higher than them. Why would you want to go to them? They're a court of appeals. If you're coming in as a court of record, you are the highest court. And why would you want to go ask them for anything? You open up a court of record, and you put their flesh on the line, and forget about suing New York State. You're going to sue each one of them personally. You're going to have trouble suing the state. That's a problem. John can tell you why. But, I mean, and you can go there eventually. But the main thing is when you come in with a court of record, they know that they can't make a decision. And you're going to end up in the Supreme Court only after your rights are violated, and the Supreme Court's going to uphold your court of record and say, yep, she's higher. She's the higher court. She wins, you lose. That's the only thing you need them for.
Let's look at Article 3, Judicial Power. And it's very simple. It's very short. Section 1. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. Now, we ordained the Constitution, and we've given them the power to ordain and establish something else, in this case, other courts. You see, those are the trial courts for the purpose of the one Supreme Court who overrules or confirms or just doesn't hear any court. You see, the U.S. Supreme Court is like the grand jury. They can hear the case or not hear the case, okay? They're obligated to consider the case, And then, you know, unfortunately, there's so many cases. I'm sure they have their law clerks looking at cases. And I'm sure each one of these judges have their own law clerks that are trained, and they kind of know what this judge is looking for and what the criteria is, and they're potential Supreme Court judges, as a matter of fact. But here it is. They are a sort of like they're a grand jury and a trial jury, because they get to overrule everything. They can turn the case around. And when they write their decision, that decision becomes law as long as that is not overturned. And every judge in the United States is required to obey that. And we tell
these judges all the time, they don't care. Well, here's the argument that I'm having right now. Here's the argument that I'm having right now. So it's the federal judges that I went to claim that they're agreeing tacitly that yes, what we did to you was wrong, Ms. Radin. That's, you know, I got rid of two federal judges, got my case reassigned, and I named those two federal judges as defendants. Now the third federal judge has taken over my case because I added those two federal judges. Actually, I added those two federal judges from the Eastern District to my case, and I added the judges to the Southern District. So here's how stupid this is. The new federal judge doesn't say a word about the judges from the Southern District where the original injury happened. She doesn't say a word about them, but she removes from my case the two federal judges in the Eastern District, and she says they have absolute immunity. There's no such thing as absolute.
What do you care what they say?
Well, that's true, too. Just open up a common law court of record and
just
shut that whole thing down.
Just go take them down. It's a 1-2-step, 1-2-3 punch. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be a walk in the park, but it'd certainly be a lot less a walk in the park, a lot more like a walk in the park than what you've done. Look at all that you've been involved with this since 2005. I mean, I would say if you got hung up real long in this case, it would take you a year, but I can't even see that. Because, you see, once they understand that you know, and they'll test you because they're going to try to throw some curveballs at you, and you got to be able to deal with those curveballs. And if you can deal with those curveballs, they're going to start to get worried. And they're going to say, she knows what's going on. And when they get to that point, that's when they fear their boss. Until you get to that point, they don't fear their boss. Look at the Scalia and all those guys is their boss. They do not want to go up against him, okay? And
let me just say this because this is why they're getting scared. And I do have other people backing me up that are like big guns. Let me finish this point.
These judges on a federal level don't care about Scalia. They're not afraid of him. They don't care about nothing because they've got control of their court, okay? And Scalia is going to leave them alone because they're in this really strange court. They refer to it as an equity court, but because of the things that took place in 1850 and other places with all these silly acts and stuff, they really think that they have something going there, okay? So the judges are not going to hear most of these cases because it has nothing to do with really equity or law. But people have allowed themselves to go into that position through ignorance. But whatever the case may be, when you set that case up, this is the whole enchilada right now, right?
Okay.
What I'm going to say. When you set that case up from day one or your awakening, day one is your awakening. I just had an epiphany. You got a whole new slate now, okay? And you're going to reset your whole case. Now, if you maintain that jurisdiction and you keep holding every foot to the fire, every hand that sticks in, you chop them off and you hold them to the fire and you don't miss a one point as you go forward. And it's very simple once you understand jurisdiction. If they mention statute, I object. They call you in for a hearing, I object. All that's illegal. You see, at some point they're going to put it all together, especially in the federal court, pretty quick. Now they fear Scalia. Now they fear the fact they may hear this case. And if they're being pulled into it, because they see, look, man, they're going to pull me. I'm going to go to jail. You see? See, you got to get their flesh on the line.
If they make a ruling in your favor, you object.
No. Let me just say this, and then, John, their argument is, you know, they clearly violated the Constitution. They clearly violated my right to equal protection.
They don't know anything about it, but go ahead.
No. Their argument is, it's okay we two federal judges that inflicted that harm on you, Lydia, have absolute immunity.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, no, you don't. When you're
in their court. In their court, they believe they have absolute immunity. And as long as...
Not when you violate the Constitution. And they're quoting lower...
No, you're missing the point. As long as the people believe it, they've got it. And the only way you're going to turn it around is to get someone on that bench and put their flesh in a line, and they're not part of the game, and they know that you're coming out after them. They
in
know
their
where
court,
you're
they
heading.
Have discretion.
They know where you're heading. You're heading up to the big guys, okay? And this could be the perfect case that they're waiting for. This is the kind of case they like, okay? I believe that anyway, okay? Now, the thing is, if it's not couched the correct way, they don't want to touch this case because it's only going to ruin the law, okay? And because people will really be confused once the United States Supreme Court starts ruling in a way against common law. Remember, you know, it's kind of strange that they're still up there ruling in common law. I'm blown away by that. And yet they have Marxists on the court right now. We've got two or three of them that are Marxists. They're outright Marxists and still... At least from what I'm hearing, they're still holding up to the common law. And that's that. You see, this is a problem for the Marxists. This is the problem for the New World Order, trying to get these Marxists to make the decisions in a different direction, because now they're showing who they really are. And
yeah,
so,
that's true.
But they're there for a reason. They're there to take the helm when the crap hits the fan. When they pull the dollar and there's chaos in America, those are the people who are going to take the helm on the judicial level. You see what I'm saying? So that's really what they're there for. Nevertheless, right now it's amazing.
So what you're saying is, and this happens in other countries all the time, that what you do is you have a crisis, and then when the crisis happens, because people are so busy spinning their wheels, that's when you'll see. I mean, in fact, there are books written about this. That's when, you know, there's a natural crisis or a politically created crisis, whatever, there's a crisis, and the people are so distracted dealing with the crisis because your life is on the line, that's when new laws are passed or judges are put into place, and next thing you know, government is hijacked in a direction that was never meant to go, but by the time the people start scrambling and catch up, it's, you know, 2, 3, 5, 6 years down the line, and they lost control of their government. So what you're saying is
that's how the Nazis took over. That's how the communists take over. They all do it the same way. You know what it is the iron fist in the United States is being closed as we speak. It's been closed for a long time, but it's taken a long time in the United States only because of the Bill of Rights. If there was no Bill of Rights, we would have been gone a long time ago. So it's taken a while. We're very close. When that fist finally closes, it's over. You they're coming out to kill me, okay, at that point. Okay, so you got to realize.
John, they already told me to my face, our goal is to kill you or imprison you. So I'm already there.
Okay, well, let's go back here to Article 4, Section 4. The United States shall guarantee. Now, who's the ones that can really guarantee this? It's the one we vested with the power. That's the United States Supreme Court.
You're the hero.
The United States shall guarantee to every state in the Union a Republican form of government.
Yes.
And shall protect each of them against invasion. And on application of the legislature or of the executive, when the legislator cannot be convened, against domestic violence. Now, let's go to 6. You see, you tie that in with 6, Article 6. And this is not Article 6. Article 6. Yeah, Article 6, section or paragraph 2. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall
Supreme Court,
be made. Excuse me.
Are the Those Supreme are, Court? It's the Supremacy Clause. Yeah.
Yeah, the Supremacy Clause shall be made in that shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be
bound
by
it.
Thereby. Anything
in
the Constitution or the laws of any states to the contrary, notwithstanding. So,
and so are all the executive offices.
What they just said here, huh?
And so are all the executive offices. So when the president says things like, listen, Ms. Radin,
yeah,
you're being...
doesn't, Look, and he doesn't even really have any power. He's got the power because the people believe these executive orders. They, show me in the Constitution where the president has the ability to make an executive order.
Thank you. Now, here's the question I just wanted to ask, and then I'll, you know, give other people, because you made this very clear for me. Thank you. Article 3, where it says the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court, in all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers,
you
and council.
You skipped something, though. Okay? You skipped something. You skip the other courts, the inferior courts. The inferior courts are the setup courts for the trial courts. The United States Supreme Court, I have never heard. You're going to have to find me someplace in history where they actually had a trial, because I've never heard of it.
Okay.
And, you know, here's the big problem. You see, they are there as the great, great grand jury to protect us from the court.
No.
That's their only purpose.
That's in the appellate division. But there are cases, I will find you that. And so the question was, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. And in those cases, subject matter jurisdiction, in those cases where the state shall be a party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. They've actually sat as a trial court, and it's rare, you don't hear about it, but they actually have sat as a trial court in some cases. So
well, okay,
I will get you
I,
in the...
Again. I prefer not even talking about that anymore until you bring that up, and I'm sure you'll get it to me next weekend. I'd like to talk about that, because I'd like to see that, and I'll try to comment on it. But let's go back to this. In all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, councils, blah, 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 all the way through, and which a state shall be party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction in all other cases before mentioned in the Supreme Court. And by the way, one of the amendments changes this, and they don't have the authority or the power to change this. Just like the 17th Amendment changed the election of the senators, they didn't have the power to do that, because this was a contract negotiated, and no one can change the body of the contract. This is forever. So when that was all illegal. So this is true when you're going up against the state. You know, that is the party of the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. But anyway, they have original jurisdiction. Remember, when it says the Supreme Court is made up of that which is invested in one Supreme Court, and that's connection right there, and in such inferior courts to the Supreme Court, but they are the Supreme Court, it's the federal court, it's the Supreme Court, it's the trial court, okay? The upper Supreme Court, I can't even fathom in any way that they could possibly sit as a trial jury, as a judge in a court case. With the exception of maybe, you know, to a problem in Congress, if they were to sit on a trial with someone in Congress or in the Senate or even the president himself. I think there is something written about that. But here's the problem why it can't happen. I mean, I'm going to be blown away if you're going to show me if this case exists that you tell me in such a way. Because, you see, the problem is the United States Supreme Court is fully 100% common law, okay? And that being said, they know they can't make a ruling. They even said they can't overturn a jury or a grand jury unless someone's unalienable rights or unalienable rights has been violated, and that's brought, now they can overturn that because the jury or the grand jury violated someone's rights. You see, now they're there to protect. Now, they're not going to hear the trial. They're going to overturn it, or they'll send it back into the court for another trial, which is probably, depending on the kind of case, it could be doubtful. But the point is the United States Supreme Court, those nine judges up there know darn well they cannot sit as a judge in a court because that's not a common law court. That's why I find it hard to believe that there's a trial, because that means that they're going to act as a magistrate and they're going to bring in a jury.
Yes, that's what they do, and it's few and far between, but that's exactly what happens.
What's the purpose? They don't have the time for that. How could they
It doesn't matter if they have the time for it or not. It matters if the people that you're suing foreign ambassador or, I mean,
right.
how many
well, that's,
people?
That's a different story. Look, I just told you that is a different story when it comes to something like that. Well, first of all, that's I don't even know how that would work with an ambassador. But it is a different
story. No,
they might in the trial court as the jury in the case of treason against the president or the Senate.
No, they don't sit as a jury. They sit as – usually what happens is one of the Supreme Court justices is named as a magistrate. That's why this is very rare.
Well,
you don't hear
– Maybe that's how it works then. But again, only in the case of dealing with the president or a case in a trial with the president. No, they're not going to
deal with the case of
your trial or my trial. They're not going to do that.
No. It's in. They don't have a choice because they're bound by the Constitution. So, and like I said, it's very rare.
Right.
But in cases
I'll tell you what. Only because I don't believe. I really don't believe this. I think you're misunderstanding something. So I'd like you to get that stuff.
Okay.
Let me read it, and then maybe we'll talk about it next week or the week after, whenever you get it. Because I can't defend or debate what I don't know the details of it.
Well, no
it,
problem.
It has to be a constitutional issue, right? It has to be. You're suing the state under a constitutional issue, and the original jurisdiction of the state. So
here's what usually happens. What usually happens is, and it's never reported, and they're very quiet about it. What usually happens is one of the nine justices will be appointed as a magistrate, and then what they do as quick as they can is they remand to the lower courts. They try to get rid of it. That's because otherwise, like you said, John, they're going to be sitting there as a common law court going, humna. They're not going to broadcast half the people.
If you're the president of a company, I mean, you can do this in order to learn humility and something like that. Of course, it would be a good thing to do. But the president of the company doesn't pick up the broom and sweep. And if he does, maybe he's avoiding his duty because he's got some important stuff going on at the helm, and he's not paying attention to that if he's down here sweeping the floors. So it's the case with the United States Supreme Court. They haven't got time to play magistrate. They're too busy reviewing all these cases to look at a case that they think they need to hear. Okay? So
let me tell you something. The Supreme Court is political and it's more corrupt than you know. And
I'm,
if you go
talking
back
about the United States Supreme Court.
Yes, the United States Supreme Court. This is William Rehnquist's dissenting opinion 30 years ago.
You see, that
he's Richard Nixon's.
Listen, you got to listen to what's going on here and understand why this is going. They haven't had enough people in there to really damage us enough, but they have had some cases that went through the courts. And who pulled that out was probably the commies, okay? The commies up there, there's a few of them, okay?
Yeah.
They will pull those cases if they're told by the powers that be, we need a precedent, we need a case. Let's get one of these cases. So they'll pull a case over, and they'll pull an equity case, okay? And that's how they do it. And
Hold it.
This is important that I get this through, not only just for you, but people are listening and they want to learn from this, okay?
Yeah.
But there is the equity side of the court that they also do have power over here. It says that, it goes in, the judicial power shall extend, this is Section 2, and this is the judicial power of the United States shall be invested in the Supreme Court, and one. Now, two, it goes, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. So you see, they can hear equity too.
Yeah.
But the equity, all the equity bullshit going on out there is so distorted, it's become chancery.
Exactly.
And so when they get a crazy case that they want to get a precedence on, they try to pull it through into the United States Supreme Court through one of those enemy judges, okay? They'll get it in there, they'll try to get it through. A lot of times they fail, but there have been a few cases. But now, let's go back to the final thing. The effect of that case is qualified by the jurisdiction. And if the person understands that, and if you're battling a case and they pull that case in, but that was under equity and not law. I'm in law. They're two different animals. One's water, the other's oil, and they just don't mix. You see, so you can really win that in that case, but people don't understand that. And I don't understand why this knowledge isn't realized by so many people. Very, very few people. I haven't met I don't know that I met anybody that really understands this. Of course, you read the books, and people in the books, they understand it. Go listen to what Lysander Spooner said in his books. He understood a lot. He understood jurisdiction. He understood a lot of this stuff, but particularly he was with the juries. You go in and Brent Winters, his book, or you read, or you get into the Supreme Court rulings, and you get very carefully, and you read through some of this stuff. Scalia understood it. You know, a lot of people understand it, but generally speaking, there's no lawyers that understand this. None.
They don't want.
And here's the problem. Everyone out there is arguing about standing, and they miss the whole boat. Miss the whole boat. It's all about jurisdiction. It has nothing to do with standing.
Yes, and believe me, the Supreme Court is corrupt. And 30 years ago, I'm going to give this to you in like 60 seconds. 40 years ago in the Bob Jones University case, there was no subject matter jurisdiction, as the Constitutional said. It didn't matter. William Rehnquist, appointed by Richard Nixon, said that, listen, why are we arguing this case? It's completely fabricated. It's made up. You don't have a real controversy. The federal government and the Jewish community and the African-American community are going after this evangelistic school. You've created a witch hunt, and there's no injured party. There's no wrong here. You just want to set this precedent. And William Rehnquist is saying, you made it up, because you're going after these people to take away their tax exemption, and the tax code doesn't say what you fabricated. If you discriminate, you're not charitable. If you're not charitable, we revoke your tax exemption. The tax code doesn't say that. You made it up. So, of course, it was pulled through by judges who are political. And then after that, it was William Rehnquist in the mid-70s who made up this concept of absolute judicial immunity, because Richard Nixon was trying to get off the hook, and William Rehnquist was his boy on the court. So you can go back to William Rehnquist 40, 50 years ago saying judges have absolute immunity. Oh, the government officials like the president can't be bothered with upholding the law because they need to be exempt from upholding the law and the Constitution because they're too busy running the government. It's completely fabricated. So, yes, it's all made up if you go back to the Constitution. The easiest thing, you're right, is just to argue the jurisdiction. So you're right about all of that. Thank you.
Absolutely, because they have no authority, and case is over and won, and now you have to get remedy, and the judge knows it. And, you know, there's a funny story. I'm not sure who told the story, whether it was Miller or I think it was Miller. Oh, yeah, I'm sure it was Miller because he's a crazy guy. And he tells the story when the case was over, the judge ran off, you know, he went along with him, and he ran off the desk real quick and went into the back room and I guess went into the bathroom. And he chased him with his paper because, you see, he was trying to get away from signing the paper, and he didn't know. I don't know whether he knew whether he had one or not, but he had a paper already signed. I want my money now. I got my bill. It's right here. You got to sign it. Sign my bill. You see, they'll run away from that.
Oh, of course they will. They run away because they know it's a wrong. They know it's a very bad wrong.
One other thing I would like to say, though, about this bill business. I didn't think about that until today. I was thinking about this earlier, and I'm saying, sheesh, you know, whenever I go to these silly courts, these traffic courts, I should bring a bill with me because I should give them my bill for my time coming into their court. You know?
Yes, you should. You should. You should hold them accountable.
Right.
And the judges will run away because they don't know what to do. Because if they give you the proper ruling in your case, which was starting to happen to me in federal court with John Gleason, if they give you the proper ruling, it completely destroys their House of Cords. And because what usually happens is a judge will come in there, they'll realize what I'm saying is correct, that I've been wrong, and I start to get the proper ruling, and you can see the judge getting turned. I mean, you can see it in my landlord-tenant case. The judge will start to do the right thing. All of a sudden, they'll take a little break and go to chambers. When they come out, they turn 180 degrees. You know, because the judge is starting to go down the road, and if they start to do the right thing, what will happen is the whole house of cards will fall down. And that's when you'll see the judge starting to lie and starting to run away, and everything that was black is now white. Everything that was white is now black, and they completely turn 180 degrees. My mother confronted Judge Patterson in the lower court in 2006 and said, can you please show me where my daughter got a hearing before she was expelled to medical school? The school knows what it's doing. It's wrong. Here's its written, published, faculty-approved hearing procedure that it gives the law school students. Here's how they lied to the medical students. Judge Patterson got up and ran away. He didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of them do. Corey had that one judge who wouldn't make a ruling, and you never saw her again either. But anyway,
yeah.
Let us see if someone else has something. We've been on a long time. But we can continue to pick this up maybe next week. I'd like to hear more about your case that you might have concerning the United States Supreme Court hearing a case. As I'd like to hear. I've never heard of this. So I'd like to see it. Okay?
No problem.
Anyway, is there anybody else that's got anything?
I want to bring an important point up. When you get pulled, that gentleman there that got pulled over and didn't have a license and stuff, when a police officer pulls you over for speeding, they've been told, and this is how their statutory law works, you are technically under arrest. They don't need a warrant because they supposedly witnessed a crime. It's different if they come to your house then, you know, after the fact. But when you're out on the road and he pulls you over for the supposed crimes, you're technically already under arrest, even if he doesn't read you your rights or anything, and that's vehicle and traffic law, and that's what they believe. So if you tell them they need a warrant, they're going to laugh at you. So just be careful with that.
Right. The moment they pull you over, you're detained. Literally.
You're under arrest, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Now, that gentleman
you're absolutely right, Gerard, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you and John the treatise on false arrest and false imprisonment, and they actually say that, too. And the two exceptions where if a police officer witnesses you being drunk and disorderly and disturbing the peace, yes, they can arrest you. But in most cases, if they're coming to your house and knocking on your door and saying we're supposed to arrest you, this just happened in Staten Island too. They killed a guy and they admit that they didn't see him commit any crime. So the first thing this guy should have said was, "Show me your warrant." That's what everybody in Staten Island and New York needs to know. Show me your warrant. Show me where it was signed by a judge. Show me the sworn oath. They don't want to give that to you because they know you're hip to their system. So you're absolutely right. In the cases where the police say, we witnessed the crime, okay, then now they got you. But in the cases where they didn't witness the crime and the guy who was selling the Lucy or the loose cigarette, the police did not see him sell that loose cigarette. So they're trying to put him under arrest. There's no reason for him. All he had to do is stand there and say, did you see me commit a crime? No. Okay, where's your warrant? We don't have one. Please go get a warrant. When you have one, come back and try to arrest me.
Right.
And that's what they should have done. And that's
right.
What we need to know.
And the other thing is he didn't have a license.
Someone else was out there, I think, wanted to pipe something in.
Hello? Yes. I'd like to add that when a police officer pulls you over, they hold court right there. I mean, you're in court. That's why, you know, they have, like John said, that they can have you under their jurisdiction because they hold court. And another thing regarding the judges when they leave and they come back, because when they leave and they come back to that court, they're under a whole nother jurisdiction. They're a whole nother entity. So you have to basically really kind of open up everything all over and address him as that new entity. Because when they leave, I mean, when you really corner them and they don't know how to get out of it, and they get up and they walk away and they go in the back, and when they come back, it's a whole nother court. And they're a whole nother
Yeah, but that's
you
all their game. That's all their fraud, though. Just remember that. You see, we don't play their fraud. But you're right.
Right.
And you can bring that up in court and make that argument and go through the thing. But guess what? When you get into that argument and you start debating it, you just jumped into their jurisdiction again. If you're going to go argue that you have standing, you just gave them jurisdiction.
No, I'm not saying argue it, but be aware of it. I'm just saying. I mean, because...
I
Listen, I know that you're not saying that, but
yeah.
I'm taking the opportunity to make that point so people
yes.
understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
well,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
And listen, he didn't have a license, so they really didn't have jurisdiction over him.
Right. He's got to break a law, and like, you know, look at, you have to be driving drunk or something, or disturbing the peace.
Right. Right.
Injuring somebody. I mean, that's if you're not doing any of those things that you're in,
there's
no
injured party. They had no reason to pull them
they
all
can't
up.
They can't stop you. Yes.
And actually, even if he was speeding, that's not injuring somebody
that's
because
right.
they have to have somebody complaining that he was speeding. And it can't
well,
be the
even
cop.
Even with that, it would have to be that they would feel that it was dangerous. I mean, obviously,
exactly.
if you're at a school crossing 15 miles an hour and you're traveling 150, I mean, yeah, let's stop that guy. Even
yes,
I would do
also,
that.
I had a friend that was in the driveway, parked, and had taken a couple of sleeping pills and was in his private driveway. And they came and arrested him for a DUI, and he was in his private driveway, sitting in the car. So, I mean, what I'm saying is, I don't think they are criminals. They're just criminals, and they're not acknowledging any law. They're making it up as they go. When you get in front of them and you're in that courtroom alone, and other people are unaware of, you know, jurisdiction and all that, and they know other people are not aware of it, they take you and they kind of try to do anything they want to you. So it's kind of like picking us off one by one. You know?
Well, ma'am, let me ask you something. Why wouldn't they? Because here's the problem. We all think they can't do this. Why wouldn't they? What's stopping them? Where's the public outrage? Where's
That's
the group of
saying.
Conscientious people who come
right.
down and say, you can't? They do it. They take baby steps, and they realize, like John said at the beginning of this call, they take baby steps and they realize they're getting away with the first lie and the
right.
second lie and the third lie, and then they get emboldened. So what's stopping them? Their good conscience? They don't have a good conscience. That's the point. The
right.
reason why they get away with the evil is because we let them get
That's
away
right.
with the evil.
Now, also, Georgia is bringing the lawmakers, quote-unquote lawmakers, are now setting up guillotines and that as a punishment. So I wanted to ask John or Gerard what they thought as far as lawmakers, whoever they may be, lawmakers bringing in guillotines and firing squads as a form of punishment, let alone
right.
just,
well,
you know, how these
again,
courts are.
Again. A state can try to decide on the best way for capital punishment if the case calls for that. And, you know, I don't know, guillotine might be a quick way to go, so that might be really a humane way to doing it. A lot they use the shots these days, and I guess that's humane. I don't know. But the bottom line is the big question is what's up with these guillotines? There's something else going on with this, and I wonder why they're putting something. You're saying they're putting something in their law, their state
I'm
law?
I'm saying that today it came down that the state of Georgia – I believe, and Wyoming
did they say Georgia, or did they say state of Georgia?
I don't want to really say for sure. I think
okay.
it was just Georgia.
And even the person saying it may not realize the right way anyway, but go ahead.
Right, but it was I know it was, it didn't say state of. I do recall that now. It didn't.
Okay.
It said Georgia. But my concern is that, okay, if we are United States citizens of America, I mean not the corporation, and our rights are unalienable, then where does this come in that they have a right or jurisdiction to take a life? If they can't take our rights, then how can they
well,
take
look
a life?
At this, no, the court systems in Georgia do not have the authority to give the death penalty. They really don't have the authority to fine or imprison at all. Okay,
right.
They don't have that authority.
Yeah.
The only one that has the authority to that is a common law court, and right now that doesn't exist in their state. It doesn't exist in your state. It doesn't exist in my state. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't exist anywhere in the United States except for the United States Supreme Court, and occasionally someone gets through and makes it a court of record, but and is able to hold it. But they don't have the authority or the power to do it. Now, the common law court has the authority to both fine and imprison, and they also have the authority of the death penalty. But there are rules to the death penalty. If we're going to follow common law, you know, the Bible says, if man takes a life, by by man shall his life be taken. And people run with that single statement. Of course, we're talking about murder, and we're talking about outright murder. This isn't an accident or anything like that, outright murder. But in order to do it, you have to read further in other places, that there must be two eyewitnesses. If there's only one eyewitness, not good enough. You can't take the life. There's got to be two eyewitnesses to a murder before you can take the life as a death penalty. So you can build as much evidence as you want. If you don't have an eyewitness to the murder, you can't put him to death. You can get as much evidence as you want, and you have one eyewitness, you still can't take his life. If you have two eyewitnesses and a whole bunch of evidence, now you can take his life. So most capital cases that have taken place, first of all, the courts didn't have the authority to do it to begin with, so they actually did murder the murderer, if they were a murderer. But the other thing, the main thing is that even if they did have the authority, in most cases they did the wrong thing, because very few cases have two eyewitnesses.
Well, a governor in this state just signed off on this prisoner. I guess he had the death penalty, and he signed off on him to be executed by guillotine. Now, my thought on that is...
Now, what did he do?
I didn't really read his case, but what I'm saying is about 2 years ago, they started, because what they do is they start testing the waters as far as propaganda. They will put this, like they started talking about, I think 6,000 guillotines were now being brought into the United States, and that was about 2 years ago. And then
right.
Everything died about that. And
right.
Now...
Was it 6,000? I thought it was more. Gerard, did you hear how
it
number?
Was? It was a lot of them, I know. It
yeah.
was.
Gerard,
it was,
do you remember the number?
500,000. It was a great deal, and so now, by the end game coming very close, they're now sending this message out to people regarding the guillotines. My thing is, okay, all of this in the common law came from God. So I'm not into capital punishment. I don't care what a person does. Maybe you should lock them away for the rest of their life. But I think God is the only, entity that should take or give life. I think it's up to God. God gave us life. I don't care. I don't think it's
well.
It's,
yeah,
you know,
you're right. But there is certain criteria.
Well,
but
the thing, what I'm saying about the criteria. See, to me. You know, from day one when we were all placed here, you know, it just seems like man has come along and he discovered the pen and he discovered the paper and he just started writing all these things that people can do, cannot do, this, that,
right.
and the other, and started just, to me, you know, like I said, I just think that
right, so
everything...
Your position is that there should never be a death penalty.
My position is that there should have never been a pen and a paper, because that is what we're bound by. We're bound by a paper and pen. And when they discovered that,
well, I
and that's
think,
when
I
our
think,
rights went
yes,
out the
but,
window.
But, But there is also the people who use the pen to write good things. I mean, look at the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights.
Right.
Know?
Oh, I. What I'm saying is, I'm glad that when they did discover it, that somebody did come along, and then take that pen and paper and protect us. But what I'm saying is, when all of this started, the Indians was there, and you know, it was no pen and no paper. So now, then here comes Marshall Dillon with Gunsmoke, and they started going into the towns, bringing law and bringing the pen and the paper, and you can't do this now, and you can't, and now you can do this, but you can't do this. And that's not what God intended. So now, since the paper and pen was invented, we're way down the line, and we've got tons of paper where they've written all the way up to the sky to try to take our rights. Mm. And the point I'm trying to make is, you know, I just go through all that confusion because
Let's go back to simplicity. Obviously,
right.
if someone's got papers of 1,000 pages in order to tell us about some law or something, I mean, obviously there's a problem there. Look at the Constitution. I mean, that's it.
Very simple.
That's it. There's nothing more to it. Okay? There's
right.
nothing more to it. Now, we've got the Bible. The Bible is the law. But
right.
the Bible gives tremendous amounts of stories and details and parables and teaches morality and so on and so forth. But strung through that whole thing is the law. And so we have natural law that comes from there. Now, when you get into something, and I can appreciate if you're against the death penalty. I'm not sure whether you said you were or you wasn't, but I can appreciate anyone being against the death penalty because of the problems we have today and because of the government. They're out of control.
Right.
Okay? So for right now, I am against the death penalty momentarily. But once
yes.
the people get back into control, we can trust it back into the hands of the people, and the death penalty would be appropriate
providing it
meets the proper criteria. And
right.
the proper criteria is a minimum of 2 witnesses, eyewitnesses.
Right.
That's what God says, 2
right.
eyewitnesses. You know, I heard a lot of preachers teach about this, and they get all people riled up, and then you look, and people are killed for murder. But there's no eyewitnesses. There isn't even 1 eyewitness sometimes.
Right.
And now... But why did they miss out on the rest of the part? Probably because they didn't do their homework. You see? And that's the other problem we have. We have a lot of people out there that are doing things, and they're not doing their homework. A little bit of knowledge sometimes is dangerous. You know, you got to check things out. You got to be involved. You got to look. You got to figure it out. But you got to do your homework. And if you're not doing your homework, you're failing.
Right. I just want to add one more thing, and then I'm done. I'll give, you know, because I know other people are waiting. But about 7 years ago, I didn't know what I was doing at all. But I know I hired an attorney to sue my landlord because he was sexually harassing me. He was rigging the locks. He was coming in, standing by my bed when I woke up in the middle of the night.
Wow.
And so I moved out. Well, when I didn't comply with him, he started eviction proceedings, and I moved out for my safety. But then I turned around and I hired a lawyer, a female lawyer, to defend me regarding the sexual harassment suit. Now, down the line, she was paid off. But for a year, this case went on for about a year and a half, and I never stepped
foot
into the court.
Why do you think that is? Let's think about that. Why do you think it went a year and a half?
I'll tell you why it went a year and a half is because the other side was filing motions, doing discovery, the whole thing, and
right.
she was not answering them. So she was getting paid off by the guy that I was suing because
right.
he had money.
But you
had...
see, all those motions don't
mm-hmm.
belong in a common law court. You know, all
right.
these cases that come before the courts, I mean, there's no reason for things to go a year, 2 years, 3 years. Look at just about almost every case in there could be dealt with in a day. What do they got to mess
Absolutely.
Around? It's all about money. That's why they do it.
Right. But I wanted to also say that she called me. after every time it was time for us to go to court, she would call me up and make an excuse. You know, I got to pick up my daughter. We're going to have to reschedule, da-da-da. Week over a whole year and a half, she calls me on a Friday, and she says, oh, you know what I want to tell you? Your court case was dismissed. I said, excuse me? Yeah, your court case was dismissed. I knew nothing. But I knew something was wrong. So I said, you know what, okay. So I started looking around, and I started looking for an attorney to sue her. Now, that's like looking for a needle in a haystack, but I found one. I found one. He sued her. And because there is something with the Bar Association, a lot of people don't know. There are seven things that an attorney cannot do. And I can't name them right now, but they're up. If you call the Bar Association, they have it listed. And if they do one of any of them, two, or all of them, they can be disbarred. So on that note, he sued her, and she had to pay me every month until she filed bankruptcy. And that's what got her off the hook. But I just wanted to add that I didn't know what I was doing. I had no clue. But I just used my instinct.
Just so you know, under common law,
right?
Just so you know, under common law, someone filing bankruptcy does not get them off the hook of paying restitution.
Wow.
Because for every injury, there must be a remedy. And if you didn't get your remedy because they went and filed bankruptcy, that's
right.
One of the things that cannot be held on there. You take it to common law, take it to the court under the common law, and you'll win.
Mm.
I should just interject. If you take out a student loan, lots of students would try to get out of paying back their obligations through bankruptcy, and that doesn't hold water either. So if you're in equity court, there are lots of instances where John is right about that too on both sides. Whether you argue,
I wish when
they're
I took out my student loan that I realized what I realized today, and I never would have paid it back.
Yeah, they're fraudulent.
They haven't
loaned you anything. They gave your money out of your trust.
That's right.
They haven't given you anything.
Can I ask a quick question, very quickly? It's a yes-no thing. I have a defendant who's being brought up on misdemeanor charges, and they're claiming, and this person keeps saying, I want a jury trial, and they're saying, no, because you're being charged under misdemeanor criminal charges, you're going to have a bench trial.
Can you tell us what the crime is?
It's the same thing. It's aggravated harassment. It's, the wrongdoers, they use this all the time. The crime is
harassment against who?
They made phone calls. They claimed that didn't have a legitimate purpose. The phone calls do have a legitimate purpose. So
right.
not
so,
to get into all of that, they're trying
right.
to deny
well, the
that.
Bottom line, they can do whatever they want to do. And the other part of that is you don't have to let them. So it's up to you. If you either when they do whatever they want to do, they're going to do it because you're letting them do it. Now, people let them do it because they don't know that they don't have to. You see, that's the difference between the mentality of a slave and a free person. You see, they want to keep us dumb. And I speak to myself first. I was a dumb person. I knew nothing about any of these things. When I started to read this stuff and my eyes started opening to it, you know, I was blown away. Okay. You know, I've been a technical person all my life. And I'm always into books and stuff, and because I have to. I'm a technical individual, and that was my business. But when I started to move into the law and look at that stuff and really, boil that stuff down, it's amazing what you find.
I keep telling them, like, in all your, keep asking for a jury trial. I even have elected officials in New York saying...
Yeah, but you're asking the wrong court for the wrong jury. They're going to give you a corporate jury. They'll probably give you only six people anyway, and that even shows you that it's a corporate jury. It's irrelevant. They don't have any authority. The bottom line is they don't have the authority. Leave me alone. Go away. Look, they can charge you with murder, and as long as they refuse to take me into that common law court, ultimately I could beat that case.
So if you're
by
a defendant...
the fact that they don't have jurisdiction.
Then you file papers... so that you're the plaintiff, right?
Well, that's the first thing you do. You have to turn it around. If they're coming out after you, okay, you turn it around, you call yourself the plaintiff and you call them the defendants, okay? And they'll frown upon that, but you got to make it clear in the thing. Look at you guys opened a court that has nothing to do with me. This is my court. I'm in a common law. I'm the plaintiff now.
And
yeah,
that's how you so I have a question. When you open a court of record and you're doing according to common law, you're the plaintiff and you're also the tribunal, which means that you make the decision.
Well, in
what,
theory,
what's the check on that?
In theory, you're the tribunal. Okay. You see, as long as you're in their stupid court and they refuse and stick their feet in and are stubborn, then you're gonna be the tribunal. Now, once you're back into a common law court, unless the other side at that point is brain dead, you're going to get a jury to make the decision, or you'll settle. And, you know, so basically, generally speaking, it's rare that you really get to be the tribunal. It's in theory, really. And there are cases like Horton has talked about.
Okay, so these essentially graduate to settlement or jury. If it goes to jury,
right,
are these jurors who can you demand that they're your peers, that they're sovereigns, or are they going to be U.S. citizens?
Well, that's what National Liberty Alliance is working on, to create juries that is free. You need people who are thinking free. And we have 8 hours to teach them that. And we don't have to really, really teach them everything. All we have to do is we require them to act under principles. We require them to act under maxims, and we'll give
now,
them
if,
maxims.
So is that one of the reasons why you want to load your documentation up with educational material so that is that going to get passed on to the jurors?
Well, eventually, we the people should have educated people who are capable of doing this. Look, everyone should come out of school with the ability to walk in any court and run a court case. Anybody, okay? This does not take rocket scientists to do this. You could do 1 year in school focused in on this, and you can teach any kid anything. I mean, and it doesn't even have to be every. It doesn't. They don't have to go 6 or 8 hours a day.
Right. I wasn't talking about.
You only need an hour a day for a year, and you got it. Okay. And the more you spend, the better you are. So,
right.
anybody should be able to defend themselves, but also everyone should be trained as a jurist in school. So when they come in to be jurists, we don't have to spend that much time with them. But in the beginning,
I completely agree with that, and I agree with the solution you're putting forth, and thank you. The reality today, if your common law case where you're the plaintiff goes to a jury because they don't settle, and in your documents that you've been filing this whole time, if that contains educational material in it, are the jurors going to read those documents?
Well, look, at the jurists hear the case. They don't read anything. They hear the argument. But the jurist in the orientation, that's why you got to give it to them in orally. And let's look at, go back to Lysander Spooner. He speaks about this. When the argument on the one side was made that the people are too dumb to be able to rule on the law and this and that and the other thing, and he blew them right out of the water. And he says, absolutely not. Nothing could be further from the truth. You people are not liable. You people are not able to make a ruling on that because you're too far separated from the people. These people who can't read and write, okay, maybe they can't read and write, but they're out there every day with these people. They're contracting amongst each other, and they know when they've been wronged, and they know, and they're able to make a decision on that. So all we have to do is give the people, even if they're illiterate, it's irrelevant. Everyone has a heart. And everyone has a mind. I mean, certain people are defective, and of course, you know, you don't let them sit on the jury. If you have someone that's psychotic, you're not going to let them sit on the jury. Someone that is, you know, close to retarded or something, you're not going to let them sit on the jury. But just the general people, they have a heart, they have a mind, and when you drive the principles and you let them know, you have a duty here, and this is very serious. The life of this individual is on the line, and you're the people who are going to decide that future for that person. And so you have to make sure that you're going to make the right decision to the best of your ability. And there are three principles you have to act upon. You have to have an honorable state of mind. You have to be an honor. You have to have a sense of mercy and a sense of justice. And if you make the decision questioning every three of those things before you make your decision, you're good. It can't get any better than that.
Now, you know, I, on the surface, completely agree with no victim, no crime.
Hey.
Now, when I struggle, and this is mostly due to effective and campaigns, is things like, you know, mother against drunk drivers. You know, driving drunk without there being a victim, okay, yeah, there's no crime, but
no,
I still think society should...
There's a victim in society there. There is a duty. This person is putting people in jeopardy. It's the same thing with corrupting the morals of a minor. You know, you're putting someone in jeopardy, and there may not be a real victim per se, but in general there is. You're putting people in danger. So what is a grand jury to do with that? I'll tell you what I think a grand jury is to do with this, and this is what I'm going to suggest in my county. To the people that we work with and maybe adopt it, and that is when a person is arrested, you don't even arrest a person that's drunk driving, okay? A person is stopped for drunk driving. It's the duty of that police officer to take those keys away and take that person home, okay? That's the first order of business. The second order of business is to call in for a tow truck, so have someone to tow it away, and now in order for him to get his car back, he's got to come get his keys, and then he's got to go pay to get the car back, and so that's the beginning of some problems with this guy. That's number one. Now he's got to go see the grand jury. Now the grand jury, I think, generally speaking, it should require him to find out, first of all, is this something that he has a problem with, or was it a one-time event? That was number one. The other thing, you know, you're going to make a record of the fact that this guy did it, and you don't want to see him a second time before you, okay? But maybe you're going to want to do something with the guy. You're going to scare him a little bit, and you're going to say, hey, look, you know, we can send you into the courts, and this was a pretty serious thing, but this is what we'll do for you. You know, you go to this program over here for 3 months, and you go sweep the streets, you know, an hour a day or something, or something, or some kind of community service, okay? You see, you're trying to correct the problem, because that is a danger. There's no getting away from it, and there's got to be a remedy for the people to protect the people. You can't allow people driving drunk. You
so
can't
who
allow
would
people
be the
out there
the
you
public
know,
at large
the morals of your children or something, you know? Huh?
John, can I just say something really quick?
I didn't hear what Josh said. Go ahead. What were you saying?
Yeah.
So who would be the victim then? The travelers?
I think in this case, the victim would be the community at large. We have to use our common sense here. I mean, look at, I come to a red light, okay? And there's cars coming each way, and I floor it and go right through it. Maybe I don't get into an accident. The cop's there. He better stop me. You know, he better stop that person.
Well,
that's a problem because he put people in danger purposely. You know, that's a problem. Now I come to the red light and I stop, and I don't see coming anyone from the right or the left. And I say, and I go past the red light. Leave me alone, cop. You see,
that's
responsible.
I went through your half an hour video. You know, and that's where I got this no victim, no crime thing. And so that's
right.
What brings this question,
right?
Because I wanted to give you a chance to sell me on the oath.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
Well, here's my other thing. They're always bringing up this license to drive. You know, the purpose of getting a license to drive is because they want to make sure, you know, to argue to the other part, is they want to make sure that you know how to operate this very dangerous machine. If you didn't have a license to drive, anybody would just jump in. This used to happen in Europe, and people would get killed.
Well, I think
people
should be able to just jump in the car and go.
Pardon me?
I think, well, look, it's our responsibility to teach our children to drive, okay?
Yeah.
And it could be the responsibility of the school. We could make it so that that driver's ed is a mandatory thing at age 16 or something. We're not going to let our kids drive before a certain age. And even if they do hit a certain age, you know, as long as they're under the care of the parent may decide, my kid's not mature enough to drive. I ain't letting them drive. You see, until they hit a certain age, and then at that point, you know, if the parent has control over the kid, no problem. If the parent doesn't have a control over the kid, there could be a problem. But the bottom line is, it's the, obviously we're in an age where mobility, you know, the traveling is a requirement. People will travel a half hour driving to get to work. There's no way they're going to walk to it. Maybe there's no buses. I mean, you live up in where we live up here. There's no buses up here. There are, but you're not going to get to work on them. It's very
right.
restrictive. You know, but the point is you need to drive. So
right.
it should be, it's a responsibility of society to prepare the children for whatever needs and skills they're going to need as an adult. And I think driving is a skill and a need, just like being able to represent themselves in court. And so that needs to be done. Now, to require someone to go to the state and get a driver's license to drive a car, I'm dead against that. You can't, because the problem with that is you're giving up an unalienable right and allowing the state to license it. Your right to travel is unalienable, so you can't require
just,
that.
Right, and it's just another form of taxation. I get all that, but right. You know what people don't bring
but
out.
But the opportunity. Look, I remember when I was young. I got my license at when I was 17 years old, and I lived in New York City, so that, you know, that's pretty young in New York City because it's generally 18, but I went through driver's ed, so you were able to go a year back, you know, 17 when I was a kid anyway. That's what the rules were. But I went to driver's ed, and I wanted to go to driver's ed because I didn't know how to drive. I'm just not going to jump in a vehicle. And I remember when I got my first car, as a matter of fact, some company, crazy company, gave me a car. I was working for a company called White Rock. Some guy solicited me in the store. I was a pack out guy, and he solicited me for a job, and I went down for the interview, and they hired me, and I didn't have a car, and they gave me a company car, and I took it home. And I remember when I first got into that car, it was the first time I had driven since driver's ed. And I was driving. I had to go on a highway. I was afraid to go on a highway. And I just took it real slow. But I did have the skills. I was trained through driver's ed. So I kind of knew what I was doing. But I was just frightful. But, of course, you get over that, and life goes on. So I think, generally speaking, the normal person realizes you just don't jump in a car, put in the keys, put in the gear, and go. You got to know which is the gas and which is the brakes. You know, I think it's just general, real, you know, just logic. But there are people who will do something stupid, and that because they do something stupid doesn't mean we have to take away the unalienable right of another person. So driver's licenses are definitely out. When we get in control, driver's licenses are no longer required. I'm not giving my driver's license up for two reasons. Number one, it's a great ID, but you can still get an ID anyway without having a driver's license. But anyway, it's a good ID. But the main thing is I might do some commercial driving. So if I want to drive a truck or something, you know, for one reason or another, and it's commercial driving, I want to be able to do that. So that's why I would keep my driver's license.
John?
Hey, John.
John, I've got a question.
Yeah.
Listen, you're going to take a guy's keys, tow his car in. He has to go get the keys, come to see the grand jury.
Right.
When
but,
did you
that's
get the
my
evidence?
Suggestion, though, okay? I don't know.
Well, when did you get the evidence, sir? Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
When did you get the evidence that he's driving drunk?
Well, the point is if he's driving erratic and it's obvious. Look, you could see people that are weaving on the road, they're driving erratic. It could be that they just got ill. It could be they made a mini stroke or something. And you'll
That's
have to figure
true.
It out.
That's very true.
And
you,
what
you, I,
but
my,
you still,
my question is
you
this.
Still,
if
you
the
still,
person
hold
is
it.
Charged
let me just finish that one
with driving
point,
drunk,
though. Hold
do you
on.
Have any evidence that he was driving
hold
drunk?
Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. Let me just
I've
finish
I've been holding
one point.
For about 90 minutes now.
Right, but you made a point. I responded to the point. I want to complete the point. Even if the person wasn't drunk and they're driving erratically, for their own safety, you're going to take away the keys and you're going to get them home. And later on, when they discovered they had a mini stroke, he's probably going to call the cop up and say, hey, I'm really glad you did that. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. And I could have taken someone else's life. You know, even the guy that's driving drunk and erratically, I'm sure he's going to be appreciative when he goes to get the keys from that cop. And I say let the cop that took the keys keep the keys, let him go find that cop so that he can confront the cop, and hopefully it'll be a good attitude, and he'll say, hey, look, you know, I realize that you're
okay,
drunk.
Okay, but as far as actual evidence that he was committing a crime, there won't be any?
Well, the evidence, there is no, look at the evidence of why you stopped him was he was erratic. He was putting endangering people. Okay, that's
But there
the
won't
evidence.
Be any actual blood alcohol content evidence or.
Well, maybe, again, I don't, look at this is a problem and we'll have to think about it. I'm not saying my solution is good and correct. Okay, don't get me wrong here. Someone else may have a better solution, but you have to deal with wrongdoing, and definitely it's a wrongdoing if someone is totally out of control, out of their mind, and what if my child is walking across the street? Okay?
Well, I understand that, sir, but my
so
question
is, it out.
Is if
we
you're
going
to prosecute
out.
People, do you not have to have some kind of evidence? That
he didn't say he was going to prosecute.
You are right. But
John,
maybe you've got – hold on. This is He's got a very
I just want to add to that.
I don't want to hear you. I want to hear this man here. I'm asking him a question.
Yeah, he has a very good point, and then I'll let her speak also. But look, you are right, all right? And that's a problem we have to find a solution for. And I
okay,
am
I'll
sure
accept
people...
that. Thank you, John. I have one other question. May I ask it, please?
Yeah.
In the literature of National Liberty Alliance, I ran across a citation of Title V, U.S. Code 7311. And that plainly states that if a public official does something or anything to attempt to overthrow the United States constitutional form of government,
right.
Well, then he can no longer serve as a public official. And so for two biennial periods, we've seen Congress pass the National Defense Authorization Act, which under martial law would suspend the writ of habeas corpus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I haven't seen anybody do anything legally to abrogate the U.S. Constitution. Does that mean that everybody who voted for that law, the people who authored it, and the president who signed it are no longer eligible to serve as public officials? Because if you put me on a common law grand jury, believe me, you've got my attention.
Mm-hmm.
I will sure as hell look at indicting those, but bring a presentment to remove those people from office. And that
is my question, sir.
Is that a possibility?
Absolutely.
Because I'm not interested in DWI. And I'm not interested in misdemeanor cases. I'm interested in staying alive. I've got clear-cut evidence that they are building concentration camps, and they
are ready to put people like me into them.
And I'm not going quietly. So
I agree.
I'm looking for
We don't have to get too much into those details because we all
agree. Oh, you don't?
With,
okay, well, it's
wait,
been very
listen,
pleasurable
listen,
being an associate of yours, but I must end this. And goodbye,
listen,
sir.
Listen here. Let me finish speaking. The reason why you don't have to get into too many of those details is because we agree with you. We already know that. We have the same knowledge you have there. So, you know, listen to the whole thing, what I'm trying to say to you. I'm in total agreement with you and what you're saying. And the only solution that I can offer is that everyone that's in office, with the exception of very few people, and I don't know if I could find any. Ron Paul's not in office, so that was the only guy I knew. But look at everyone that's in office, as far as I'm concerned, needs not to run again the next election. They need to leave office. They need to leave office because they put us in jeopardy. Okay? They had a duty to care for this nation. They had a duty to protect the borders. They had a duty to make sure that there was tranquility within the states. They had a duty to prevent subversion. Okay, they had a duty to give us a common law and maintain common law in every state, in every court, and they failed. And I don't care if it was ignorance or what. They failed. Don't run again for office. And it's up to the people not to vote for them. But you know what? The other part of the process we need to do, and we're going to get to it, back to it eventually, is the committee man process, because those are the guys that puts these people onto the ballots. Very rarely do they get onto the ballot without that support. And we need to take that whole system back and give it back to the people and put good statesmen into office. But these people who have done these dastardly deeds need not go back in. Now, let's say they do run. And so they haven't been indicted or anything, so they run, and even though you told them they shouldn't, but they run anyway. There's nothing you could do about it, but you watch them like a hawk, because the moment they take a dollar from these special interest groups, as far as I'm concerned, indict them. Okay?
Everybody knows the prisons are built. The prisons are already built. They're by their major transportation hubs. They're scared to death there's going to be a public uprising, and they're going to start putting people in prisons, what you're calling concentration camps. Everybody already knows. You're preaching to the choir. We've known for years. Everybody in New York is like, what do you mean they suspended habeas corpus? Are you kidding me? We already know. There are books being written since 2006 all over the local TV shows. America is a fascist state. We are not a representative republic anymore. We know. We're scared. That's why we're working.
Hello, John. I just wanted to add with the DWI,
right.
As far as common law, and that's what we're working toward,
right.
Every situation, whether it be DWI, whether it be domestic violence, whether it be whatever, there are certain situations and circumstances in each case, being where you said everything in their system is put under an umbrella. Okay, DUI, that means that they're driving erratic or whatever. No, I have known people, one lady, she had a beer at a friend's house. She drove two blocks and got stopped because their system, even if you sip a beer, which it doesn't make you radically driving
right,
or
I
whatever.
Agree with that,
they, yeah, they. I mean, no. If you sip a beer and you get on a bicycle, they can stop you for public intoxication. So the thing is, with the common law, I hope that with each situation, everything is looked at.
Well, that's what common law is about.
Right. That's what I'm saying, and not put it
under. Evaluate everything as a unique situation on its own. Two people could commit the same crime, and it can pretty much look alike, but they're still different.
Right.
And one jury might press hard, one jury might go light. Okay. And but it's up to the jury, and that's why. Look, it's our duty to become informed. It's our duty to become educated so that we can be educated jurists, so that we can have a system. And that's going to take a little time to bring back the people to a point where they can think free, because people don't know what liberty is. I mean, anybody that belongs to Liberty Alliance and is learning the things that we're learning, you've got to admit you never knew what liberty really was. That's what I admit. Okay, I really never understood liberty until now. But the thing is that we got to figure these things out. We got to get through a hard period of time. It may be 10, 20 years. It may be just a generation, the turn of a generation, because we need people. We need to capture our schools and educate our children and grow them up in the way that they should walk. And one of the ways they obviously should walk is they should be walking. We should need to teach in our children in school the sense of duty to return back to society. Okay, and what is that sense of duty? To sit on a grand jury when they're called, to sit on a trial jury when they're called, to become a committee man at least just one time in your life, a committee woman, committee man, just one time in your life. It's only a two-year thing, and it only takes a night here or a day here. There's not much to it, okay? And so everybody should have a sense of duty to do that. This is self-governing. The committee men is the control of the political process as far as who's getting elected. So we should all participate. We need to teach our children. And the jury is the way we control our government. We need to teach our children. And once they understand that, that's when you'll have control of your destiny.
Right. But also with this voting process, that I don't think that any of us has voted anyone into office. These people have fraudulently screwed with the ballots. I mean, they are already bought. These people come out of nowhere. We don't know who these people are. Like Barack Obama, we don't even know that man's real name. Okay,
right.
So when he came out in 2008, that media, whoever they back and, you know, bring out of nowhere, I don't care if it's Mitt Romney or anybody, you know, they have already conditioned those people. They have already paid for those people. They are one of them. So when people in this country think that they have a vote, they have no vote. These people have already selected these people, and they're already there,
right.
And they're there to destroy us. So I don't believe in the voting scenario, because we don't have anything to do with that right now.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
maybe at one time we did, but we don't now.
Well, hold it. Right now, we may not, because I agree with you. The whole thing's a fraud. But you should be registered to vote. and you should go vote anyway, mainly to be on as an active individual. This gives you the opportunity to become a committeeman. This gives you the opportunity to take control of the process. And that's why I say people should vote now and be active on those roles, especially
yeah,
if people understand
that,
what's going on. Now, let me just explain, and I'm going to try to do it as short as possible because there's a little involved here, but I'll tell people go watch the video. The elected committeeman is the committeemen that serve today, every single one of them in New York, with the exception of about 100 or 150 of them, it's a facade. They're not real. They have not been elected, and it's a top-down organization. It's controlled by the Communist Party, both the Republican and the Democratic parties. It's a top-down organization. They're told what to do. The whole thing is a fraud. Okay. Now, we're going to turn that back around because there is an election law that requires the elected committeemen, and once you move over into that process, you get rid of the top-down structure. Okay. So now you're going to free it. And we've done things in New York, which we'll talk later about, that turns everything upside down here in New York once we get into the system. And it's only a matter of requiring the state commissioners on the Republican and the Democratic parties up in the Capitol to obey the law. That's all it is. Force them to obey the law, and there's 150 individuals who understand what's going on will take total control of the state and will bring it back to the people. We'll now get real people, real people to run for office, statesmen. Now, here's the big problem, okay? The voting machines. Very few people understand or know who decided to bring machines into the voting process. Do you know who decided that? You know, Bob Schultz, he went and sued the Board of Election, sued the wrong people. I think he may have sued even the state, but if he did, he sued the wrong people, okay? The people he should have been suing were the people who are in control of that, and that's the Democratic and Republican parties. They're the ones, the leadership of the Democratic and the Republican parties are the people who make the decision to have voting machines done. Okay, we take it back. We get rid of the machine. It's a hand count. It ain't no big thing, you know, in these election districts to sit up for an hour and count votes. Your eyeballs aren't going to fall out. You're not looking at chads, you know. I mean, you could deal with it. But the bottom line, there is a process. And the process is a group of individuals, you know, that are involved in the committeeman process are involved in the counting of the vote. People are actually paid for certain parts of these processes. And the way, you know, you go back into the original law, going back here in New York, for instance, in 1909, and you read about this, they have a process on counting the vote. And you got the one person who takes the box and brings it over and puts it on the table. That's his job. He's done. Okay? He doesn't touch it again. Okay, you got the next person who comes over and opens it and puts it out on the table. And then you have two people, one behind, one in front. They pick up the vote. They read the vote. The person behind acknowledges the vote. They pass it over to another person who records the vote. And they record it according to the way they heard it and the way they see it. A person standing behind them acknowledges the vote. You move to the next. And it's done in public. You see, that's voting. Anything other than that is not voting.
Okay, and I'll just have one question. Okay, with the voting, you say registering. Okay, yeah. Now, here this last year, they went on an all-out campaign to sign up all people in the hood everywhere. I mean, just anybody, please register to vote. The reason being for that is, and
yeah,
I'm asking, is this a part of it? Because this is what I was told, that once you register, you're giving them, in other words, you're putting yourself in citizenship with the corporation. Where, like, they use the same thing with that 10 miles around District of Columbia, even though you live somewhere else, through your zip code and through your residence, not domicile, you are under their citizenship. So this is what was being put out there. I'm not, you know, putting the Bible on it or anything, but I'm just saying that that's how they can claim you under their corporation, by that voter's registration, because you're stepping out of your, like, you draw a line down the middle. You have common law over here, and you have your, you know, you're an unalienable person on the left side. Then you have the corporation on the right side.
Why do we give them reality?
By voting, what I'm saying, by voting, by registering, you're pulling yourself out of the common law, the unalienable man on the left.
No, you're pulling yourself into the right. Your opinions are coming, unfortunately, from poison. You've been poisoned by websites. They have a point to what you're saying. There is a point to that, and it's called the fiction. And the key thing in the voting thing that they're really getting is that U.S. citizen thing, okay? And when you check that box, that's where they say, we got you. You know, look, listen to what Bill Thornton had to say. He's right on the point with this. I mean, he said very clearly, why give them any credibility? Why argue the point? They're not going to bring it up. And I certainly aren't going to bring it. That has nothing to do with my case. So it never really comes to play. And if you're in their court, they may think it comes to play, but once you challenge their jurisdiction and move into your court, it doesn't come to play no more because it's a fraud on the court. It's a fraud on the people.
Right,
it's a fraud on everything. The whole thing is a fraud and fiction. And as long as you give...
Hold on.
As long as people give this credibility and reality, then it's reality. But it's a fraud. It's fiction. It's not real. Expose the fraud for what it is and move on. Now, the purpose and the process. Let's go through the original history here. History goes all the way back to the beginning. They had the books, the Republican, and there were two parties, okay? And I'm sure they could have registered also outside of a party, and one of the parties, I don't know how they handled that. But in any event, the people had to register to vote. So it went into a book. That book, during the entire election time and adding to new names and people who wanted to get in, was handled by the party itself. In each election district, people come in and they get put onto the book. Okay. Now, when you came in to vote, if you wasn't in the book, you know, they tell you, and you wanted to vote, there was a magistrate on call. Go down and see the magistrate and do the affidavit, and he'll send you back with a paper. And so that's what they do. They go down to the magistrate, and I presume it was a sworn thing that he's an individual, you know, he lives in the community or moved in the community or something, that he's here to vote, and that he's not going to do another vote. He's not going to go to the town next door and vote. Whatever that was all about, the point was it gave him the ability to come in. Even right there on that day, he went to see the magistrate. He's able to come put his vote in. You see, I think that's the way it should be done, because the bottom line is you do have to know who these people are that is voting. People can go from town to, especially today, you know, and they will do it, you know, going to vote here and there, and many times if they can get away with it, there's no registry. And so it has to be done on the one hand. Now, on the other hand, with the power of the grand jury, we kind of neutralize the evil that might get in anyway, because we're not going to let them do the evil. You know, if people are taking funny money to vote for things for, special interest groups, well, then they need to be arrested at the border. We need to be indicted because they just took a bribe. New York State, that's a bribe. If a senator is paid in Washington or up in Albany, if some special interest group gives them money and that's buying their vote to go and support their whatever special interest, that's a bribe, and that's a crime, and there's an injured party, the people.
Right, but I was just putting it out there because a lot of people are not aware of it, and if you're aware of it, even though we know from top to bottom it's all fraudulent, you know, we know that, but I'm just saying some of the tactics that are being used to, you know, kind of capture us, and that's one of them. They're using that. So,
right, but as long as...
Because it's not set up like
they can
it should
only... They can only use that if you allow yourself to get under
Absolutely.
Their jurisdiction.
Right.
If you it doesn't. You can sign and do whatever you want. Okay. That your rights are unalienable. They cannot be sold. They can't be given away.
Right.
They can't be taken away. They're yours.
Right.
Okay. And so now that you have that, okay, you can't check the box that says U.S. citizen and you've given it away, and you've given it to your children's away. No, that's a fraud. It's a fraud on its face. It's a fraud anywhere you go. Now, if you acknowledge their jurisdiction, they're going to rule on that. in that frame of mind, but you beat that out by just denying them jurisdiction.
Okay, thank
you. Stay in your jurisdiction.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all about jurisdiction.
Yeah,
okay.
It is.
Hello? Hi, yeah. Can I please ask a question?
Sure, go ahead.
How are you, Ivan? Okay, I have to go before a hearing because they had ripped me off on my pension and everything with about 5 attorneys, and this was all fraudulent, and I've been, they forced me in retirement, documents have been changed and all that. So, in other words, if the people, the same people that were involved with my termination of my job, or actually they forced me to retirement, and my documents were changed, and I got all the legitimate proof, I can go back and press charges on each one of these individuals that are supposedly from my attorney?
If they broke the law, and you can prove that they broke the law, and you were injured, you can go to the grand jury, and yeah, you get that taken care of.
Great, and I don't do that.
But remember, right now there is no grand jury to go to. That's what we're building.
But even now, because some lady had mentioned something about the Bar Association.
Nah, they are the problem.
Oh, so that's okay.
The Bar Association is a communist-run organization.
But can I go after them individually?
Yeah, you can go after those people individually. Yes, you can sue them in a common law court,
okay,
under jury, or if it's a crime, and you know, then at that point you can bring them up to the grand jury, and the grand jury will take it to the courts. You don't even have to do anything; just be the witness, and the grand jury will be seeking remedy for you, because that's the process of common law, is to find remedy for the injured party, not to fine someone so the government can put more money in the judge's
exactly.
pockets, not to put someone in jail because hey, we're going to make money there too because they pull off their SESQ accounts, okay, then and so therefore the judge and the court and everybody makes money again, and the prisons make money, and they're all making money, and they're destroying the economy, and they don't care.
And that's the way
the system is now. But in a common law system, no, the focus is on how do we find, what's the remedy in order to bring this person, to restore the person who was injured? What has to be done? And that's the focus of a court case.
Okay, and the other thing was, you know, like for the children, because we have a horrible school system here, and they've been using and embezzling our children's money, putting our kids on their, you know, saying that they need, putting on medication. The kids, the food, everything is so deplorable.
Right.
The kids are not being educated or nothing, and everybody is at their wit's end, because even for the special
education. They're teaching the children how to live
nothing,
in a militarized zone.
Nothing.
Yes.
No, the only thing they're doing is putting these kids in juvenile and then into jail. There
right.
is no dreams and hopes, especially for minority children
right.
in certain areas. It's going throughout the country.
Also, well, only the people can make that change. Only the people can save America. Only the people can bring their schools back to where they belong. And it's done by doing what we're teaching people to do,
right.
is to bring
okay.
back the grand jury.
Because
and we intend on dealing with the school systems within our own communities.
Well,
I know
we had
I'm going to put
kids, we had 5 kids that were just, they were murdered in the past year and a half. Because, or 2 years, I should say, they were petrified in going to school, and they ended up dead, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
as I said, what repercussion do these parents have? And then, like I said to the parents, if you don't send them to school, you're going to jail. What
right.
repercussions do these
Yeah, right
the
now, you don't
have
any. You don't have any remedy right now whatsoever. You're stuck at their mercy, and there's nothing, you know. You can fight it in court if you know how to do it, but that's going to take an education, so it's going to take you a year to learn what you need to learn, which you should do anyway, okay? But meanwhile, when the grand juries get in, when the people get in and take control of the juries again, now you're going to find remedy to your problem without an educator, but you should become educated anyway because you need to be. So go on to line and learn, go to essays and stuff and learn what's going on and how to defend yourself and what common law really is.
Okay.
Hey, John, can I just say something for a minute? This is Lee in Idaho.
How you doing?
Just so you know, 31st, we have a meeting, so we should be having Idaho constituted.
Great.
And then second, just, I've actually, in court, I have 19 officers charged individually. It was a case involving an unlawful traffic stop, basically saying that I was driving without privileges and I can't remember the other charge. Oh, resisting and obstructing, which they're all bogus, fraudulent charges.
Oh, yeah, they love that one. They love that one. Yeah.
But what happened was after 7 visits to court on my own without the assistance of an attorney, we did win. And then I did find an attorney, and we filed a tort claim, which they ignored. Somewhere along the way, the attorney got cold feet when we decided to move forward with the case. And so we filed a federal lawsuit into the court, which was accepted, and it's still ongoing. And we'll win this case, and there will be some sort of remedy. So it does happen in their courts, but you have to be familiar with what they're doing in those courts while maintaining who you really are. So I'm really glad to see
if you play ball in their arena and you get the right lawyer, okay, the right lawyer means he knows the judge, okay? You get the right lawyer, okay, there's a good chance you're going to win the case, but you're not going to win that case until that lawyer gets the money he's happy with. And so he may take a year, 2 years, even 5 years to get your case through. And that's a crime in itself because, like I said, most every case could be dealt with in one day. I mean, there's no reason to go through this craziness. I mean, maybe, you write your papers, it takes a process, 90 days of stuff, and then you get into court, and one day you're done and you're out, and it's over. There's no reason for this. But there is a reason. It's called money.
Well, yeah, they want to discourage you. That's a big part of it. They don't expect people to actually see it all the way through, and when that happens. But what I will say is that through this whole process, the courts and the officers that are officers of the court that are in there as well have taken notice. So I think they're seeing more and more people actually not taking deals and standing their ground in court. So I think as we move forward through this National Liberty Alliance, I think it's going to have a great impact just from what I've seen so far. So I just wanted to say that, and then I'm going to sign out. So.
All right, thanks. So we got 8 more minutes, and so I don't want to go over. I want to go to sleep. So anybody that wants to pick up now, fine, but we're going to keep it short.
Okay, I got one further question, Mr. John. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you post a link to something that will show me exactly what steps to take, what pleading to file, and how to word it to challenge the jurisdiction of a court, and that I'm in the wrong court, that I should be in the common law court.
Yeah, there are some examples, framework that you can go up onto National Liberty Alliance and get them. But the key thing.
Tell me where I find them.
Well, here's the key thing. What you need to do is you need to go under the essays and lectures, okay?
Uh-huh.
And you go to the common law page, all right? There is court, let's see, where is it? Common law lectures. You can click on that, and when you get into that, this page, this is your education. So this is what you need to go through, and then after that, you could start reading our papers and work off the framework. If you try to do it without the knowledge, you're going to lose, and they're going to burn you. They're going to let me tell you.
Okay, so
this is
the common law lectures. What are they? Are they MP3?
Oh, there are MP3s, there's some videos, there's a couple of different teachers, there's also, we have constitutional courses, you'll want to take those, and then there's a lot of other stuff, but those are the basics.
Practice guide? Have you got any legal forms that I can look at and discover?
Oh, yeah, you on the same
place. Where are they? Where can I find them?
Under lesser essays and lectures, you highlight that, and you come over to court access courses, okay? And then you can come in there, you can click on Court Access Courses, and there is free books, MP3 books you can download. We have Black's Law Dictionary, we have Court Procedure Book, we have a fourth edition of Black's, we have Brovier's, we have a Court Handbook, we have Federal Civil Procedures, Maxims of Law,
Memorandums. I just wondered if you've got a practice guide. You got some forms that'll show precisely how do I take a traffic ticket and walk in there and file that motion with that judge, with that clerk. and proceed to argue with them and tell them that they don't have proper jurisdiction.
Well, I think you'll find the ability to do that by going through the common law process. There.
Okay, thank you.
You'll
accept
learn
that
a lot
as your answer, and I certainly appreciate your help, sir.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Thank you. All right, anybody else? We got a few more minutes. Yeah.
I've got a couple of questions.
Julie?
Go ahead.
In Montana?
Yeah.
I was asking you a question on Monday because I am already in a position where I've given up my voter's registration and don't use Social Security and don't have driver's license.
Right.
And I don't, I guess I want advice about getting back into the system because I'm, I want to do,
Right.
the route first.
Yeah, what you did is you followed the information off of websites and they gave you this stuff and you know, sometimes they charge you money for this stuff. I know one website has a tremendous amount of information. Matter of fact, I go there to get a lot of stuff. It's been a while since I've gone there, but they just got a lot of resources, so I use them for the resources. But they have this poison plan that they lay you through to get rid of your citizenship and to go through all these things. And then they require you to do that before they'll help you. And I don't know if they actually ever do help you once you go through all that stuff. So people really, in my opinion, are damaging themselves. First of all, you're saying to the government, hey, I'm a real radical. I disagree with everything. And so you're really mocking yourself.
I wouldn't
do that. If you want it all back, I guess you could just go back and say, I want it back. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it. I don't know. You know, you're in a pickle, and it's a shame that you listen to these people. But, you know, I listened to these people, too, in the beginning. Because when I was doing the research, I found certain sites. They had this massive amount of information. I'm not going to say the name of the site. But they had this massive amount of information, great resources. And they were teaching me things, and I didn't know anything, so I needed a teacher. But I am one of those people who check things out. But as I dug deeper into it, at first I was agreeing with it, and I started to go through the process. One of the people that was with us was helping us to write, not to write papers, really, to check papers and then, you know, help us tweak it so that we're common law-ish because we didn't know about it yet and we were going into the courts. And and so we took this person's advice. We went and did declarations and we said certain things in the paperwork and none of that amounted to a hill of beans. Okay, if anything, they laughed at us and they got rid of us a lot quicker than they would. It didn't take them long to figure out we didn't have a clue on what we were doing to begin with anyway. We really didn't understand what we were up against at that point. But of course, that's the school of hard knocks. Now, we never gave, I was considering, you know, giving up certain papers, but I never went through it because I came to the point, you know, in much confusion eventually comes understanding. In order to get understanding or wisdom, you have to go through a state of confusion. You see, you're puzzling through things. You're trying to figure it out, and you're trying this, and you're trying that. You know, any entrepreneur will tell you that in order to succeed, you have to fail. Failure builds success, okay? But let me finish this point. So anyway, you know, once you go through this process and you learn all this stuff and you get to that point, we got to that point, I got to that point, other people working with us, you know, they came to the same conclusion that freedom can't be this difficult. It can't be this complex. It just can't be. And then we found the simplicity, and then we found Bill Thornton, and he made it very clear, very simple, and wow, there it is, confirmed our suspicion, and we started to take a different look at it, looking at things very simply. And the key thing, it all boils down, everything boils down ultimately, as far as court is concerned, to one thing and one thing alone. It's not standing. It's jurisdiction.
Right. And you know what? There is something that you had taught, and I followed through because I got subpoenaed. Two people were trying to take me to court, and there was something that they had mentioned. I went through and I followed the process of it, and I beat both cases. So definitely it is working. And guess what? It was thrown out. So I appreciate this, and I want to learn more about it because we're doing it here, and it really did work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it doesn't work for everybody, though. Bear in mind, because you get these hardcore judges, and they're a problem. And if you're going to be able to fight them, you have to have knowledge, and you have to have more knowledge than them. So that's
well,
the
they wouldn't even sign off. We did what was told, and they didn't even sign. They just threw it out.
Right. Well, that's a success. That's what I that to me. That's
I had too. So that, and I thank you for that. Yeah. But as I said, you know, I definitely want to learn it because I understand a lot of the stuff. But as I said, again, we have to curtail it and what has to be done. But the basic things for this, as I said, it really can work. And I'm going to call you later on something else Monday this week. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
So
right,
I was involved in a group.
Go ahead.
I was involved in a group, and we had a grand jury going and everything else. So I have a lot of paperwork out there that, with affidavits and declarations and stuff, and I don't really know what to do with them. I haven't paid taxes for 5 years, so I don't know if, you know, if I went back into the system, I could be in jeopardy of that.
Yeah,
so
I
that's
don't
why I need some
advice. You're going to have to think about it, pray on it, and then make the best decision on what you think is good for you. If you really need to go back into the system or if you can continue to survive outside, you know, you've already done the damage. Going back into the system can help you a little bit as not being mocked. And, yeah, this grand jury you got involved with started to require these things?
Yeah, that was all part of it, yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
And we had our
you see,
own
that's a problem. These people, and I'm not going to name who and where because I know who some of these groups are, and they've tried to connect with us, and we just have no part with them because we're trying to stay focused on process and procedure and true common law and principles. Principle, everything. It's all about principles. Principles. And you know what?
Right.
The people need to learn humility. And we're not going to be successful until we become humble. And humility is a gift from God. That means we've got to come to the Lord and bend the knee. So a lot of people don't want to hear that, but that's the truth. I think it was Benjamin Franklin said, you know, we're either going to be ruled by tyrants or ruled by God. It's your decision, okay? And if you're ruled by God, you obviously have to bend your knee to him. And that's what we're doing. We're showing people how to be ruled by God by becoming jurists and standing on principles and bending the knee to the God and expecting him to fix the problems in the country. All we have to do is do the right thing. Whatever that work is before us, do it with a sense of honor, sense of justice, and a sense of mercy, and we will be conforming to the will of God, and it may very well be he'll bless America again. That's my hope.
Yeah, that's
my
hope, too.
Maybe if you got something final other than that, I want to go to sleep.
Yeah, John, can you mail me the jurisdictionary and the CD that you...
Yes,
I know you're
you
really
know, busy. My jurisdictionary is sitting on my desk right here. I'm looking at it. I got it.
Okay.
One of the problems I have is I have a program that will allow me to burn it, and I got to find out which one it is. It's inside my computer. But the other thing, I remember there were some tricks to it. So I just got to find the time. I've been so busy.
If you mail it to me, I'll burn it and then mail it back to you. I could do it that way.
I can do that. I got your address. I'll mail it to you, and if you can burn it out, that's fine. And just be careful with it. I paid a lot of money for it, and get it back to me.
Okay, no problem.
All right,
okay.
I'll do that. Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Okay, with that, we're going to end tonight's program. I appreciate everyone for coming, and I think we had some good conversations tonight. And Lord willing, we'll be back next Thursday. We will be back Monday, of course, and we're going to be simulcast our Monday program. They may want to simulcast this program, too, this radio system we're involved with. We'll get a little more into that maybe on Monday. We'll give more detail. But we're also, they invited me over to do a Bible study on Saturday nights. I think it's a 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock. I don't remember what time. I'll have to find out. But they're going to be doing, you know, they asked me to do this Bible program, so I'm going to teach the Bible over there for an hour and then give an hour or two of open forum questions and answers. And we'll post them. I may broadcast it right through National Liberty Alliance Monday night room, you know, this room right here, for the sole purpose of really being able to record it and put it up on our site because this recorder system works well. So I'll figure what I'm going to do, or maybe they'll give me a copy of the recording and I'll post that for people who might want to listen in. Anyway, we'll see you on Monday. Good night.
Good night.